Okay. Welcome, everyone, to our Highlights of Recovery Workshop. Let us open with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The opinions expressed here today by those that share are their own and not necessarily those of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How as a whole. Now I would like to present our phenomenal, fabulous, captivating, and spectacular speakers. There we are. In all, we have 16 participants whose names were submitted as options for repeats of their past or current qualifications. Their stories are great, and each speaker will have about 10 minutes or so to share on their experience, strength, and hope. Kate, who is our spiritual timekeeper, will give you a two-minute warning and let you know when time's up. Please acknowledge her. Thank you, Kate. I would also like to ask all of our participants to give their name, phone numbers, and time zone.
Speaking. I've been in HOW. This is Lois. I'm a compulsive eater. I've been in HOW now for 20 years, 20 and a half years, and I have back-to-back abstinence, and, you know, I was going to use the slips wisely, but I came into this program at death's door. I was in really bad shape. I had been in regular OA for a couple of years, doing very poorly. I never caught on at all. I got to the point where my disease was very, very crucial. I have permanent physical damage from it. And anyway, so it became imperative that I get into this program. A friend brought me in. There was the moment I walked in, well, first of all, I didn't understand anything that was going on. It sounded like a bunch of, okay, there I go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. So, like I said, I was in really, really bad shape, and I came to CEA HOW through Al-Anon. I was at a meeting, and I revealed my bulimia to somebody who was there, and instead of recoiling from me in horror, she had that wonderful 12-step acceptance, and she just gently told me that there was another program called CEA HOW, and I was very resistant to it. I just didn't think it would work, and I didn't want to surrender to them and have anyone run my life. But this was around in the fall. But she didn't push me until we made a pact to come to our first meeting on January 22nd, was 1990. So I had a few months to think about it. So I came, and she never made it. So she's a very, very overweight lady, and she's my Eskimo and a dear. I see her every so often, about every 6 years that she comes back around. But anyway, so I came in that day, and something happened. And it wasn't me. It was the grace of God, just absolutely the grace of God. Because I remember sitting in that room, and I looked up at the ceiling, and it was packed. It was a little tiny room. We just had 30 people, and it was the winter, and we had our winter clothes, and, you know, you're just jammed shoulder to shoulder, knee to knee. And I looked around, and I couldn't figure out why I was even there, but I knew why I was there. It was just that dual argument going on in my head. And I looked up at the ceiling, and I just got the idea. I guess it was God already working for me, saying that you're down for the count. There's nowhere out, no way out but up. Get a sponsor. So I just sat, and I couldn't even listen. I don't know what anyone was saying, but I heard the my name is, and clap, 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 and I thought, how silly. But something was pulling at my heart. And at the very end, when all the sponsors stand up so that the newcomers can see who you are, you're available, I just picked some lady, and I walked up to her afterwards, and I asked her to be my sponsor. And I was shocked when she said yes. I think I had been so disappointed all my life, and people wouldn't help me. You know, do it yourself. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Even going to therapy, I would say, what's wrong? And they would say to me, well, what do you think? Well, if I knew, I wouldn't be there. You know, I was just lost. And this woman said yes, and she took me to the literature table, and you know, I bought the 12 and 12 in the big book and got a phone list and the food plan. And in those days, all we had was the trifold food plan, and that was it. And a friend of mine calls it the two-bit food plan, but it worked. It totally worked. And I went home, and I guess I was having that talk with myself and God, and she told me to, my sponsor told me to read the food plan over three times, go through the trifold, and call her in the morning with my food written down, and go to marketing if I needed to get things I needed. So I did get a pad, you know, a spiral notebook, and a pen. So she said, be prepared. I just can't say she was strict, but I was scared to death. And like I was telling my friend on the way over, hell in those days was a real scary place. You know, it's like, oh, they're the Nazis and all that. And I was terrified to make a mistake. But it wasn't really that way at all. It was just in me. I was just really scared, and I could already see my character defects were bubbling up to the surface. So I did I thought you're supposed to do 30 questions in 30 days and not slip, so I did it. I think mainly out of obedience and fear, but maybe, you know, it is a healthy fear, and it worked for me. And I around day 10, I had a real lifting and an awakening, and it was marvelous. It was like, if anyone's ever landed in Hawaii, when you get off that plane, it's glorious. And it was that kind of vivid color. And anyway, I just took off, and my sponsor led me after 30 days to get a service position. So I became an intergroup rep, and that's when I met Ray, our founder, because all they had was one intergroup at the time. So I jumped aboard that, again, not understanding anything, but just doing it because she said so. And I went right into my inventory. I had no problem with it. I couldn't wait to uncover and claim and discard. I wanted to do this so bad, and I did my inventory in 5 weeks, and then I hit goal weight. Being a bulimic, I had about 22 pounds to lose, so I lost that pretty quick, and I had to get a maintenance spot. We did not have food inventory and maintenance, and I moved right into maintenance, and I had to get a new sponsor, which was daunting. You know, I felt so abandoned because, boy, my first sponsor was like my mummy. But that was another growing up episode, and so I had to go through that and not slip over it and come to grips with some feelings of abandonment and things like that. So the unfolding, the experience of how in every step of the way has been amazing and miraculous for me. And my main thing that I live by in the 20 and a half years that I've been here now is don't eat no matter what. I refuse to eat. First of all, I don't think I have a recovery in me, and I'm just too exhausted to have to go through that again. I've been through a lot of life in 20 years. My dad died. My mom died. I'm now grandma of three. So birth, death, graduations, weddings, you know, bankruptcy, IRS audit, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I refuse to eat. And what I've found by the grace of God and this incredible fellowship, because I'm never alone, who leads me through it, that if I walk through life, the ups and downs and even the boring days, stone cold, sober, and abstinent, I experience it completely so I don't have to do that again. And I have my what I call my spiritual savings account, and I know if I can get through this tough episode, I can get through another one. Because eating is only going to postpone, and I'm going to have to do it again. I don't want to have to do the painful experiences with the food. It's so painful, and it just keeps happening over and over again, and I don't want to do that. I want to learn and live new and fresh every day and grow to be what God created me to be. So thank you so much for allowing me to pitch.
Okay. Thank you, Lois. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Did Sheila get in here?
Hi. Yeah, no, I'm on the phone. This is Sheila. I'm a compulsive eater.
Okay, Sheila. Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being on the call, and thank you for asking me to do this. This is nice, and I know we're doing 10 minutes, so I'm sharing for 10 minutes, and I've got a timer set here. And my name is Sheila. I'm a compulsive eater, and what I wanted to talk about is kind of something that is changing and shifting for me in an exciting way in reference to the idea that I really want to be of service to people who are struggling with their eating. And you know, it's funny, the woman who really changed my life, and she kind of set the pattern for me in terms of how I sponsor and how I specifically do it, was a woman who was very, very successful. I'm here in Southern California, and she had a very successful career in the film business, very, very successful. And she used to sponsor four of us, right? She would talk to us 15 minutes a day, right? And everybody had a time slot, and she's the one who taught me. You know, she said, your time slot is 8:15. If you call me at 8:15, we've got 15 minutes. If you call me at 8:20, we've got 10. If you call me at 8:25, we've got 5. And so I got, you know, it was very clear that there was a, you know, that there were some very healthy boundaries in place, in addition to all the other wonderful things that she taught me, and again, really kind of modeled the idea of sponsorship that I carried to working with chronic slippers. And so I would always sponsor two people. And I remember what I've always said for years is I said, you know, I too am pursuing, you know, the arts and the film business. And I said, well, you know, when I become as successful as this woman, I'll sponsor four people. And in June, I turned some kind of a corner, right? I'm doing another four step. It's like my fourth or fifth How four step in the, you know, 18, 19 years I've been in CEA How. Plus, I finished that four-step, and I started doing a big book four-step, right, the three components of the big book four-step, the resentments, the fears, and the sex inventory. And I've actually finished that, and I'm reading that to my sponsor now. And I think it was part of, you know, being in that process, because it's always just such an incredible thing when I do a four-step that, you know, something huge shifts. And what really became clear to me is that it was time for me to start sponsoring four people. That is, I was no longer going to wait for something outside myself to tell me that I had the time to offer this kind of service. So I started sponsoring, you know, the four people that I talked to in the mornings and at the beginning of the summer. And I got to tell you, it has just been a game changer. And I have just learned so much about my recovery. And I learned so much about what I want to do, what works and what doesn't work for me. And I've learned about how much I depend on my sponsees, right, to help me stay abstinent. And this is tricky because, again, I sponsor chronic slippers. You know, I'm not looking for the new people who are coming in program, the people who've never done it, the people who are really fresh and really hungry and probably have a pretty good shot at kind of surrendering and accepting what we do here and just getting on board. You know, I sponsor the people who've been here for years. And so it doesn't always work out that my people, the people that I sponsor, get it right away. But one thing that became very, very clear is how much it means to me, because I have one sponsee who I started with in June, and she just really bit the bullet. And, you know, the way I describe it to my sponsees is I'm kind of looking for the sponsees that are going to chew off their paw in the trap before they're going to get into the food. And this is one of those sponsees, and I found myself so inspired by her, and it just really made me realize, this is a conversation I've been having with my sponsor, that I think what I've been doing, a lot of the work that I've been doing with chronic slippers, is I've been working too hard to try and help other people find their recovery, and I haven't been paying enough attention to my own, or I've been living with this idea that I'm some, you know, superwoman, that I can, you know, return all the outreach calls and worry about doing that, and I haven't been taking care of myself and making sure that I've been making, you know, the calls that I need to make to take care of my needs. You know, that is, I've not been carrying the message. I've been, you know, carrying the sponsee, right? And that's not working for me anymore. And it's just very exciting, you know, when I get these new awarenesses and realize how it's going to affect me and how it's going to affect my program. Because what it's done is it's taken me, despite the fact I'm actually on, you know, reading my fifth step now, and then my sponsor has sent me ahead to do the, you know, write the list of character defects and the assets. And I know that when I'm doing 6 and 7, I'm supposed to write character defects and I'm supposed to write, you know, the positive assets too, because when I get to the My Creator prayer, it asks me, you know, My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. So I have to have seen, you know, the good and the bad written down in 6 and 7, not just the character defects. So I'm actually on those steps. But where this has really cycled me, all of this, is back to steps 1, 2, and 3, just acknowledging that I'm powerless over whether or not anybody gets abstinent. And the thing that I am responsible for is always carrying the message, not trying to carry the person. And I've been doing that a lot. And it's funny because my back had gone out about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and I kind of have chronic issues with my back due to, you know, all the exercising I've done over the years. And I think, and there's no reason that my back should have gone out to the extent that it did, you know, a month and a half ago. And I think the reason is I finally got to that point where I realized I can't continue to try and convince people that they should accept this blessing and this miracle of abstinence. And I realized that's really what I've been doing. You know, I get a lot of outreach calls. I get, you know, 24 calls a week, and I might know 3 of the people. And, you know, a lot of conversations about, you know, oh, I'm a chronic slipper, and, you know, can you help me figure out the lie, or, you know, any of the myriad things that I hear. And so I spend a lot of time on the phone, right, trying to convince people to accept the blessing. And I just had a long conversation with my sponsor last night, and I said, I can't do that anymore. I can't do it. I don't have the energy. Not only do I not have the energy, I'll be honest with you, I don't have the desire to try to convince people to accept the blessing here. There's no way that you can understand what a miracle it is to go through, right? We just heard Lois talking about, right? All those things she'd gone through, you know, and Lois has been absent 20-plus years, right? All those things she's gone through and didn't have to get into the food, right? My mom died. When my dad died, I got into the food. That was, you know, 10 years ago. But when my mom died 4 years ago, I didn't. And there's no way that you can possibly explain to somebody who continues to go in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, how glorious it feels to go through wonderful, holy life experiences, right? Both the peak ones and the valley ones, and not have to get into the food if you haven't done it. And there's no way I can explain to somebody what a wonderful thing it is when you finally get to that 11th step and you're really willing to completely surrender and pray only for the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out and see what wonders God has in store for you. You know, I know for me, my big fear about surrendering and, you know, finally praying for God's will is I just, you know, I always thought it was going to be something that I wouldn't want. You know, I thought, right, I was raised Catholic. I thought if I prayed for God's will, I was going to end up being a nun somewhere hot. And I don't like heat. That's what I thought. But there's no way you can tell somebody how wonderful it feels when you finally understand that it is God's great pleasure to give me my heart's greatest desire, and that's God's will for me. But there's a lot of work to do in between them, between getting there and that point where I surrender completely. I have to tell you, just as I close here, I've got, you know, just a couple more minutes here. I absolutely feel like I'm on fire in terms of how glorious it feels to surrender completely. There is nothing like not wanting. You know, it says it in the book. It says in the big book, it said there's only one real freedom, and that's doing what we ought to because we want to. And I got to tell you, there is nothing I want to do more today than eat exactly what I've written down and committed to my sponsor, and I commit it to another person. I commit it to 2 people because my sponsor's blind, so I can't email it to her, and I like emailing my stuff. So I commit it to my sponsor, and I email it to another person. There is nothing I want to do more today than eat that food. And, you know, there's a big event that's happening tonight, and I thought, oh, I've committed my food. Oh, shoot, I want to make a change. And I thought, eat before you go. The event is the people and the joy and the glory and the fun stuff that's going to be happening. It's a bunch of stuff with, you know, high school kids. And that's the fun. That's the glory. The glory's not in the food anyway. And I got to tell you, I never would have imagined this. I never would have imagined it. But you got to hang in. And when that desire to eat comes up, I tell my sponsees, it comes up for everybody. It comes up for me. It comes for Lois. It comes up for the people who got 20 years, right? When that desire comes up, the only difference between somebody who's a chronic slipper and somebody who's got a little bit of time here is I'm going to make one of 2 choices. I'm going to either turn toward something that is going to take me further down the path of recovery, or I'm going to turn to the food. That's what's going to happen. That's what the third step, it's always a third step issue. If you choose to get back into the food, if you choose to eat, instead of stay abstinent, it's a third step issue, right? Because you are choosing your will over God's will. And that happens to everybody. And I can't be on the phone anymore for hours and hours trying to convince people that they should make this choice. I don't have the energy anymore. I really, really don't. And again, it's just very exciting for me, and this is actually a very healthy response for me. I'm sure my Al-Anon sponsor is, you know, doing somersaults, because I finally got it that I can't make somebody want the blessing. I can't. But I'll just close with this, and I'll tell you, there is nothing better in my life than the idea that I get to surrender here. And I used to say, oh, it's so much harder, you know, because I am sober in AA. And you know what? It is harder to surrender in the food program. But now I get it that it's a blessing because I get to surrender at every meal. And I do a medical absence, so I do 3 meals and 2 snacks. So I get to surrender 5 times a day and make it very clear to God, based on what I put in my mouth, that I am here to do what you would have for me, not what I would have for me. And that is glorious. And I'm just very, very grateful to be here. And I so thank you for having me on the call. I'm going to leave my number for outreach. I don't know if we're doing that, but I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Oh, we're doing it at the end. But,
all right. I won't be on the call at the end. But at any rate, I'm on the phone list.
Mm-hmm.
Sheila J., thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Sheila. Kate, are you a star 6? Are you unmuted? We don't hear you.
Who are you looking for?
Thank you. Kate? I'm now unmuted. I was not. Thanks.
You weren't, because we weren't hearing you.
Okay.
Okay. Katie, you're next. Katie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Katie.
Good. The unmuting worked this time.
Now it did, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And, boy, thank you for the speakers. You know, I was thinking highlights of recovery. I was trying to think about, gee whiz, wanted me to qualify based on previous qualifications, but I don't remember what I qualified or what I said or, you know, and how do you fit years in 10 minutes? And, I thought the theme is highlights of recovery. And the first things that came to my mind were changes in attitude, peace, serenity, changes in perspective. And I'm always able to find the silver or gold lining in whatever happens. And I thought, well, let's see, if I was a newcomer, I wouldn't think much of that. I just want to get, you know, slim and pretty and have my life change, because I know that everything will change for the better once I lose the weight and I look slim and pretty. And that's what I thought when I came into my first 12-step food program. And I stayed abstinent for 6 years. In that program, and I was going to 3 meetings a week. I did the work. We had to do 30 questions in 30 days, and at that time, if I changed sponsors or the sponsor slipped, I had to do the first 30 questions all over again so that she could get to know me. So I did those 30 questions a lot. And at the time, they didn't have questions afterward, and I was in another 12-step program. I'm also sober in AA. And I tried to use the steps in AA, too. I tried to use the program, and it didn't work, and boy, did I feel like a failure. I moved, I got sick, life changed, and those were the exterior things that were happening that precipitated the slip. The reality was there was one poorly attended meeting where I moved to, and I didn't keep up the meetings. And just like in every 12-step program I hear, you know, especially in CHOW, we don't do the meetings. We have a slip. Or relapse, or leave, or whatever. It's always the meeting attendance, it seems, that comes first, that goes away. Well, I lost the weight, wonder of wonders. Not like everybody else did. I wasn't one of those 90-day wonders. It was like a pound a month, a pound and a half. And my sponsor was really, really a strong support for me. And lo and behold, I reached maintenance. And the miracle is that never, with all the diets and with all the attempts at losing weight successfully, I would always gain it back, and then some. But I've been maintaining an 80-pound weight release for, gee, I lost track of the years. You know, I came into this program in November 1st, 2004, a Saturday morning, and my sponsor was this very polished little lady, and I'm short, too. but I wasn't polished. I wear loose clothing, and I'm very, very super casual. Well, I wanted the food plan, and she wouldn't give it to me. She didn't give it to me until a few meetings later. She just walked me through it. I had no intention of staying because I knew that I could not abstain from sugar and flour. I tried before. I knew I couldn't do it, so what's the use? Well, for some reason, I know the reason, you know. I went home. I called her. I told her what my lunch was going to be and told her what my dinner was going to be. And that was November 1st, 2004, and I haven't had a reason to slip ever since. And that's not me. For me, truly, it was a gift, and I cherish that gift. I don't want to lose it. I don't want to play with it. Don't want to tease it, because my life is so much better. And that, to me, is a side benefit. Of all the things, that's a side benefit of doing the work in this program. By doing the work in the program, I've changed my attitude. You know, when I complain about my car's not working or this isn't working, I've got a car. When I complain about the taxes on my house, I've got a house. And, you know, everything that I can complain about, I've got. I've got physical issues that, you know, interfere with my mobility. But, hey, I've got this candy apple red scooter that goes faster than most people can walk. And, you know, I need help. Well, I live by myself. Well, I don't really live by myself. I've got my two dogs, my cat, my fish, my plants. I don't live with any other human beings. But, by golly, I've got this wonderful service dog who's a gift. He was a stray. And some of you know the story. It's just important that I remember the story. And he's with me all the time. And he's such a stalwart companion, you know, and I wasn't responsible for his coming here. You know, that's another gift. The gifts are small, but if I choose to look at them as gifts, then they're there. If I choose to look at things as positives, it's amazing what happens. You know, sometimes I'll be delayed leaving a place, or I have to get to a place, and I won't make it on time, and I think, gee, I wonder what accident I missed. And I've seen that. I left my daughters one night a little bit later than I planned, and I was tired. Well, had I left a few minutes earlier, I would have been involved in the accident that I had to slow down for. And I wasn't involved. You know, I could just go on my way and say a thank you prayer. And life's like that for me. When I'm sick, I'm not as sick as I could be. And the peace and serenity is unbelievable. I don't have to get all bent out of shape about, you know, things other people do. Now, do I? Oh, yeah. You know, my sponsor knows that well. My first sponsor, by the way, has passed away. The sponsor I have now is exactly what I need. I wanted so badly what she had. I was willing to call so early in the morning because that was the only time she had available, and I'm ever grateful that she's there. Changes in perspective. I guess that would be looking at the glass as half full and not half empty. And I'm able to switch the thinking when I start to get negative, because I was a very negative person. When I start to get negative, you know, it switches. And it allows me the freedom to live. It allows me contentment. I guess that's the greatest thing, the contentment I have, as long as I don't pick up the food. If I pick up the food, there's a steel door that slams shut between my higher power and me, and I'm the one who caused it. And I don't have to do that today. Do I get hungry? I get the sensation of feeling hungry. Doesn't make sense. I'll get it an hour after I've had a good substantial meal. Do I get cravings? I don't think I get cravings anymore. I think those are past. The first month, I don't want to discourage anybody who's a newcomer. I do want to say they do go away, and it's worth it. And the first week is probably the toughest, and it just gets easier. As I worked the tools, it got easier for me, and I kept saying to my sponsor, and I had to make outreach calls because I had to hear the people, how long does it last? How long? And they just said, keep coming, and I did. And, you know, the feeling of being clean was wonderful. You know, it was like that, oh, what is it, that tornado. Anyway, Mr. Clean, anyway, we'll do that. And it just felt like my insides sparkled like my outsides. And all the fat that was on the outside, well, that's crushing all my organs on the inside and not allowing them to work properly. And by golly, you know, my body's working great comparatively. I have some issues that, you know, they're just there. They show no signs of going away, but I can adapt. And it allows for other adventures. I was blessed to go to the conference. And, you know, Buddy, my service dog, is a great conversation piece. And when you go out in public to restaurants, kids always want to pet him. And they're allowed to after he's done working. And they just, you know, he's a great advocate for service dogs and what they do and that they are there. And they're more common in the public. And he's a real good representative.
That's,
but, you know, thanks. Thanks, Kate. I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't have the adventures and the experiences I have if I wasn't abstinent. If I wasn't abstinent, I'd be in the food. I wouldn't be aware of what my grandkids are saying or doing, my daughter and my son, their spouses. I wouldn't be aware of my surroundings. I couldn't tell you if it was a sunny day or a cloudy day. I'm in Southern California, so most days are sunny. I'm not by the coast, so almost every day is sunny. But, you know, I live a good life as long as I look at it that way, and I've been given the gift of looking at it that way, because for today, for this moment, I choose not to pick up the food. And I choose to ask my higher power to show me what he wants me to do and to give me the strength to handle it. And I just trust that at the end of the day, that's what's happened. Sometimes I botch it up. I don't pick up the food, but sometimes I botch it up. But it's okay. I do the best with what I have, and I have a lot of gratitude for what my higher power has done for me. And at that, I want to thank you so much for letting me share and for being a part of this. And I look forward to hearing the other speakers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Katie.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I'm just curious. There was some confusion at the beginning, and I was asked to speak at this, and I'm not sure. I was told that I was going to speak third, and not that it matters, but I was just curious if maybe I got on the wrong list or something, if I'm supposed to, you know, speak at this.
Is this Chrissy?
Yeah.
You're next.
Oh, I am?
Yes. Go ahead, Chrissy.
Okay, thank you. This is Chrissy, Compulsive Eater. I just want to say thank you so much. I'm so thankful to be here today and to be abstinent and to be asked to be a part of this. And just, I'm just so thankful. The highlight for me today is just being here and being abstinent. And I just want to say that how it was for me was, you know, from a very young age, the age of 8, I can remember that food called my name, and it's been a long road, and I was a very rebellious person all through my life, and I still, even when I first got into See How in 2003, I rebelled and came kicking all the way, but I was very sick and with diabetes, and just, you know, this food plan and the tools and the steps and the other people in this program have really, you know, been my life preserver. My higher power was angry at God for most of my life. Didn't know where he was, even as a small child, growing up in a home. Very strict religion, but, you know, I couldn't see God because, you know, the person that was in charge of my food was very controlling and very mean. But I know that now, after getting in to See How and even experiencing a relapse and coming back in July of 2007, I realized that, you know what, I have a journey and everybody has a journey, and that was part of my journey. And, you know, See How and work in this program and the steps and the tools have really helped me to work through so much anger and bitterness. And I just cannot begin to tell everyone that's out there that the freedom from that is just amazing. You know I have a long way to go, because the things that I did to survive with using the food for 45 years, those things don't just go away. It takes time to change. And that's why I'm glad this program is a daily thing, because I know that I can work these tools every day, and I can stay abstinent today, and I can talk to other people and know that I'm not alone like I felt most of my life, all alone, you know, just alone and not having friends and not being able to make friends. And so the only friend that I ever really had was my food, you know, and just and then seeking out other things, too, to fill that hole in my soul. And I know now from working the CEA How program that that is my spiritual malady, and I filled it with food, and just I am just so beyond just unbelievable, just so thankful for this program because I was suffering, you know. I never really got into a lot of weight loss programs till like I was 30, and that's when I started my big, I got to do this, I got to do that, I tried exercise, I tried this program, I tried that program, and I was a diabetic, still am, because my doctor told me once you're a pickle, you're always a pickle. But after getting in to see how and working the program, I was able to get off all my diabetic medicine, all my blood pressure medicine, just unbelievable changes. And when I went back into relapse for a year, terrible back pain, was getting injections, couldn't hardly get out of bed. I was just walking through day to day, miserable, but I did what I had to do to make it so I could have some money and spent a lot of time isolating. But I knew that I was driven back. You know, I know that my higher power brought me back, and I came back July 27th of 2009, and I'm going to tell you what, relapse is not a pretty place, and but I know that I had to make that decision for myself. You know, my back was against the wall, and I got down, and I told my higher power, who I call God, that I can't do this alone. You know, I could stop for a while, but I could never stay stopped. You know, I always reached a certain point and thought, oh, I'm better now, so I can go back to the way I used to be. Not with See How. This program keeps me conscious and awake every day when I work my tools, because I'm talking to other people and I'm hearing and I'm awake and I'm seeing the butterflies and I'm seeing the birds and I'm hearing them sing and I'm seeing other people that are in pain and I'm able to reach out to them. And you know, that's the greatest thing about this program for me, is I see myself dying to self more and more. No, it's not easy. But that's what I'm learning from this program for me, is that, you know what, the more I love, it hurts. It does hurt to love people. But you know what, it's worth it, because being abstinent, I couldn't imagine going back to the way I was. And I'm not saying that I was a bad person, because I wasn't a bad person. But I was very unhappy, and I was very sick, and almost died a couple times from my diabetes. But, you know, I kept telling myself, hey, I'm okay, I'm taking my meds. You know, the little thing we call denial, boy, it sure rears its ugly head. But that's why I love See How, because the tools, like I said, help me stay awake. And that's what I need to do, even though it's painful to face things in life. You know, I can do it because I got other people walking through it with me and my higher power. And this week I lost my dog of 10 years. I had to put her to sleep Monday morning. And you know what? I didn't have to eat this week, though, over it. You know, because I'm feeling it. I'm feeling the pain and the sadness. And I didn't die. And that's okay. It's okay to be sad. And it's okay to be mad. And that's what I love about this program. I'm learning it's okay to feel. You know, I spent 40 years thinking it wasn't. You know, don't tell, don't talk. You know, just hold it in. And so just talking, you know, people in this program have told me that you have to talk like your life depends upon it. And that's the truth. And sometimes, you know, maybe I'm overbearing sometimes, but you know what? I'm not perfect. I'm just human. And that's, you know, just some of the highlights for me I just want to say is that I suit up and show up in life now. And even when suiting up and showing up is uncomfortable and things happen, it still all turns out okay. Maybe not the way Chrissy wants, but it turns out okay. And, you know, I just going to college at 45. I've almost got my associate's degree and planning to go on and being abstinent and living through painful things and having to talk with people and deal with people. Boy, that's a big one for me because I used to stay in the house and isolate and think that if I didn't leave the house, everything would be okay. I wouldn't have to deal with people. And I always said that, you know, people were my biggest problem, you know. So it's like I'm learning how to live from this program, and it feels good, even though it's painful sometimes. And I just want to say that learning how to live, even I'm growing up. That's what I feel like. I'm really growing up, and boy, growing up sure is painful because I stunted my growth with all those years of eating and other things that I did to not face life on life's terms. But you know what? Life is good, and this program just. I just know that I have to take action. My sponsor told me, just remember, Chrissy, that decisions without actions are what we call fantasies. And she is so right because I could sit around and make all these decisions in my mind, but I never did the footwork. And see how it's taught me how to do the footwork in life. And you know what? Things change. It takes time. Things don't happen overnight. I know as an addict, I want it now. I want it my way, and that's the way I thought for years. But if I just keep getting up, suiting up, showing up, you know what? I reach my goals, and it's an amazing thing. You know, stay abstinent. Weigh and measure your food. Spend time in quiet time in the morning. My sponsor, she's so godly, and I love her, and I'm so thankful she's godly because she has taught me that I can trust in my higher power. I can find my higher power. It doesn't have to be her higher power, and that's what I really love. She's never pushed, and she never told me, you must do this or you must do that. She has been so loving and kind and given me a choice, just like my higher power does, and that's, I just love it. And just knowing that I have a choice today when I get up in the morning to stay abstinent or compulsively eat, to make my outreach calls or not to work my tools or not to, that is Chrissy's responsibility today to herself. And that is just an amazement, even wanting to take responsibility. I learned at 45, there's a lot of things I don't want to be responsible for, but like I said, I'm just so thankful and see how that I'm learning to grow up. And you know what? It's never too late. There's a picture at our college of a lady, 95 years old, that graduated from college. And I don't care how old you are, you're never too old to learn new things. And just want to say that, to me, the tools and the willingness to listen to other people, because I never wanted to listen to other people either. It's just so funny, the things I think about. I've come a long way just from being back in the program for a year, and just so thankful for everybody that shares their strength, hope, and experience, because it helps me. It helps me go just a little bit further. Even if I can stop for 5 minutes and call somebody, it changes the whole framework of the way my disease is talking to me at certain times, and that is just mind-boggling. And I just know that this program it works if you work it, but you got to work the whole thing. It's just amazing. It just all works together, and I just want to say thank you, and with that, I'd like to pass.
Thank you, Chrissy. Can we have your phone number and time zone twice?
My phone number is 740-962-6063. That's 740-962-6063, Eastern Standard Time.
Thank you so much. And if Katie's still there, can we have yours? We didn't do that before.
Yes, I'm here. My phone number is, this is Katie, my number is 951-246-9002 Pacific Time. That's 951-246-9002 Pacific
Thank
Time.
Thank you so much. And Sheila, are you still available? Okay. If not, I'll give you Sheila's number, and that's 310-413-1745, and that's Pacific time as well. 310-413-1745, and that's Pacific. Okay, thank you, Chrissy, again. We're ready for Janine. Janine, are you there? You need to hit the star 6. Okay, if not, we'll come back to Janine.
There, it took me 5 times, but I did finally get unmuted, I believe.
Oh, okay, sorry about that. Go ahead, Janine.
Okay, hello. My name is Janine. I'm a compulsive eater, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. To qualify, my new life began on February 19, 2009, the day I attended my first CHOW meeting. My abstinence date is May 22, 2009. I am a food inventory step maintenance sponsor and am maintaining 137-pound weight loss in CHOW. But I have gained more that can be weighed on a scale. How much does hope, peace, clarity, and serenity weigh? What does friendship, support, faith, trust weigh? What does God weigh? What does a rescued life weigh? These are rhetorical questions, but this much I can tell you. It feels weightless. It feels like I am defying gravity. Today, this blessed day, I believe I can fly. Because many of my vivid early memories are food-related, I believe I was on a path of compulsive eating at quite a young age. At 2 or 3 years old, my aunt and uncle would pick me up for a trip to the corner drugstore in our little Texas panhandle town. I remember sitting on the curb of the main street while I ate my frozen treat, and I thought my aunt and uncle loved me more than anybody else. But back then, there was a deposit on glass pop bottles. My sister and I would collect them and then haul them to the store to cash them in for a drink, and if I had enough money, an additional confection. If I bought the off-brand, it was bigger. So I remember choosing that one, and at age 3, I had already figured out I needed more. One afternoon, about age 6, I spilled my treasured soda pop, so I got down on my hands and knees and sucked it up off of the kitchen floor. I had already learned the lesson well. I needed more. When I was about 9, my family went to visit my granddaddy, who owned a little grocery store in Oklahoma City. When we visited, he always allowed us to choose some candy, and I remember looking up and down the aisle at the myriad of choices, trying to make a decision. I arrived at a plan. I would take one for now and put some in my pockets for later. I stuffed my pockets full, and next morning, my mom found the stash spilling out of my coat onto the floor. That afternoon, we drove back to Granddaddy's to return the loot. Amid tears, I confessed that I was a thief, but no one acknowledged the underlying reason behind the behavior. I needed more. As a little girl, I remember despairing and negative thinking, sitting in front of the mirror to watch myself cry. Poor, pitiful, lonely me. I can picture a scene as a preschooler. I sat crying at my mom's feet while she was ironing. My mom was too tired to give me attention. I have absolutely no memory of her reading to me, playing with me, or holding me on her lap. I needed more. Growing up, my favorite meal was my mom's soup. Because it was inexpensive, she would make a huge pot. It was one meal that I could eat all I wanted, and I loved the stuffed feeling. It felt like love to me. And I would eat until it hurt, but I needed more. I was a very active child. I didn't want to sit still, take a nap, sit down to practice the piano, or read. Because of this, I was not obese. I had periods of heaviness interspersed with periods of rather average weight, but all the time, no matter the reality, I felt fat. As I continued to mature physically, I didn't like my body. I thought I was too tall. My feet were too big. I was miserable in my skin. In seventh grade, I ate myself to a 30-pound weight gain. No one in my family said a word. No help was offered. No one seemed to notice the gallons of missing frozen sweets that I was using in an attempt to shut up the voices in my head and fill the hole in my soul. I needed more. One particularly heartbreaking scene in my mind was one evening in college. I was in a student lounge on campus. I was there alone, just me and my best friend at the time, a vending machine. I put in the coins, pressed the button, heard it drop, and ate it. Put in more, pressed, drop, and ate. again and again, like a robot programmed to self-destruct, over and over, trying not to feel the pain, trying to survive. I ran out of money, but I needed more. The yo-yo pattern of weight gain and loss continued for the next 40-plus years. If I could string together a few days on a plan, I could lose weight. I tried every imaginable diet, grapefruit, liquid, meat and water, Weight Watchers, Burger, Stillman, Atkins, Fin-Fin. I fasted for 30 days, then used enemas. I took handfuls of diet pills, which caused heart irregularities and sleeplessness. I never reached my goal weight, and after I fell off the wagon time and time again, I gained every pound back plus more. So over the years, I ended up fatter and fatter and fatter. I guess I needed more. My health was deteriorating dramatically. Every joint in my body seemed to hurt. Sleep apnea, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, low blood sugar, heart palpitations, limited mobility and flexibility. My life was ruled by food and fat. Could I fit in a booth, airplane, or theater seat? Could I climb the steps? Would I sweat too much? Would I lose my luggage and have absolutely nothing to wear? Would I embarrass myself yet again? I avoided events if I knew that people from the past would be there. I did not want anyone to see what I had become. Life was a day-to-day struggle, but I put on a good game face. I was quite an actress, great at pretending and amazingly good at faking it, highly skilled at dishonesty. My personal relationships were sick. I couldn't understand how I got stuck with all these hateful, uncooperative, incompetent people in my life. Feelings of shame, worthlessness, and self-loathing were always there. In the morning when I opened my eyes, I had an instant feeling of dread. Another day in which I would prove to myself and to the world that I was a failure. I felt like I had a huge boulder chained around my neck and that I was dragging it up a mountainside. I feared I might give up and tumble into the abyss of isolation and despair. I needed more. This self-destruct pattern continued year after year, and although I believed in God, my life was spiritually bankrupt. I prayed, I knew scripture, but I didn't really think God cared about this part of my life. Why couldn't I just stop eating? I did other difficult things. I worked hard. I accomplished career goals. I was good at my job. I had friends and a beautiful family. But as I repeatedly lost this battle with food, my trust in God and the faith that he cared about me diminished. Food became more powerful than God in my life. I needed more. A few short yet miraculous months ago, a series of events unfolded that changed my life story. In November of 2008, I learned about a meeting less than 5 minutes' drive from my home called Seahow. It was not until February of 2009 that I got desperate enough to seek it out, but I really had no intention of signing up that night. My first impression was bewilderment. Where were all the fat people? I was the only fat person in the room. Listening to them qualify, hearing about their physical recovery got my attention, and then I listened to them share. Their experience and strength became evident, but it was their hope that hooked me. I wasn't at all sure about the Seahow business, but I was sure I wanted what they had. They most certainly had more. At the end of the meeting, they said I had to choose a sponsor. Thank God, in that instant, I had the willingness to seek more. That was the beginning of an amazing journey of growth and healing of my body, mind, and spirit. It was the beginning of a new way of living. Through illness, deaths, failed relationships, celebrations, holidays, trips, weddings, reunions, you know, this adventure that we call life, I now have hope to share, love to give, and so much more. I can tie my shoes. I'm completely off of blood pressure meds. My blood sugar is normal. I have no joint pain. I heal quickly. I choose to exercise and move my body. Now, upon awakening, the feeling of dread has been replaced by an attitude of gratitude, and I pray, thank you, God, I'm alive. I'm abstinent, and I have found Seahow. I am working daily on my spiritual fitness, improving my God consciousness through prayer and meditation, seeking God by using the tools of Seahow, taking a day at a time. I'm willing to go to any lengths for victory over compulsive eating. I feel I have a purpose for living. I am here to serve my higher power and to carry the message that we are loved and no longer have to suffer in the devastating throes of this addictive lifestyle. But I have so much more. I am realizing the gift of honesty. Through honesty, I find truth, and the truth is setting me free. The gift of open-mindedness. I'm not stuck in a mindset. I am gaining clarity of thought, and I am learning to hear God speak to me directly and through his servants in this program. I am overwhelmed by the love, time, care, instruction, and positive examples that are being showered on me every day and see how, but I still want more. I still want more. Today, I pray, God, give me the chance to see myself as I am, often fearful, often negative, but the once overwhelming fear of not enough love, respect, money, status, time, affection, friendship, security, food, and soda pop no longer controls me. God can and will, if he is sought, grant me the willingness to surrender those defects, and there are more, oh, so many more. But that is okay. I am learning, sometimes quickly but mostly slowly, that it is not necessary to be perfect. Progress is the goal. Progressing toward dependence is the goal. The degree to which I am able to turn my life and my will over to the care of God is the degree to which he will release me from my compulsions, not just toward food, but toward my crippling defects of character. But there is more. I am learning that there are people who will carry me and people who will allow me to carry them. I am learning that when I face fear, I am given courage. I'm learning that when I support a brother or sister, my capacity to love myself is increased. I am learning that pain is a growing experience. I am learning that facing the darkness sheds light on the subject. I am learning that acceptance and surrender results in strength. I am learning that God wants good things for me, including hope, health, and dignity. And I am learning by giving away all the gifts that I have received and see how I will get even more in return. And can you believe there is still more? I am claiming the promises. As I persistently walk in the path of spiritual progress, remarkable things are happening. When I look back, I realize that the things that come to me when I put myself in God's hands are better than anything I could have planned. It is a new and wonderful world, and no matter what my present circumstance, I am amazed. I have a new freedom and a new happiness. I do not regret the past. I know serenity. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity is disappearing. I am less selfish and fearful. My attitude and outlook on life is changing. I am still often baffled by situations, but much less often than before. I realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself, so much more. I feel the nearness of my Creator. I am at the beginning of a spiritual awakening. The feeling that this compulsive eating problem is disappearing is strong. I feel I am on a broad highway. I'm free at last, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Who could ask for anything more? My name is Jimin.
Oh, sorry.
And my number in Central Time is 405-447-7441. 405-447-7441. Thank you.
And what time zone is that, Janan?
Central Time.
Central Time. Thank you so much, Janan. Next is Tara.
Okay, I'm here. Well, good morning, everyone, and good afternoon to some. My name is Tana. I am a recovering compulsive overeater. I am a recovering bulimic. I'm really honored to be able to be a part of this workshop today. Okay, I came into this program in 1991 with dysfunctions that were driving my behavior and caused me a lot of emotional, mental, and physical pain. I came in on my knees. I was so afraid that if I did not get help, I was going to die. I was addicted to prescription water pills for almost 20 years. I was in a toxic relationship that was going nowhere. My relationship with food was totally insane. Food was the enemy, I thought. I was deathly afraid of gaining weight, and this was because of the fact that I was an overweight child. And that caused me so much pain. I was extremely codependent. I had no clue how to set boundaries. I felt responsible for the lives of family and friends. If I loved you, I thought I had answers for you. My self-esteem, it was in the toilet about my mental abilities. I wanted to finish college. I wanted to finish my degree. But I felt I was too stupid, too old, and I was afraid to try. So working this program turned every one of those dysfunctions around. It began when I came into program, and I was answering the first 30-day questions. I got up and threw away my water pill stash. I had no desire to use them. That was the first miracle, and it came quickly. After my first 30 days in program, I found the strength to walk away from that toxic relationship. And interestingly enough, God kept the gentleman from calling me for that 30 days. So that was the space that I needed to begin my healing. So with my sponsor's help, I got through my first 7 days of abstinence by eating in my 3 weighed and measured meals, which was a big challenge because it seemed like so much food. It was so scary. I'd call my sponsor 2 and 3 times a day and say, I'm afraid I'm going to gain weight. And he would say, just trust the program, Tana, trust the program. So to my surprise, I lost 3 pounds. And it was at that point that I began to lose my fear of food. So I began to realize, okay, if I eat these 3 weighed and measured meals, I will be all right. I will not gain weight. What a big, huge, huge miracle that was. Then I became aware of my codependence. I began going to CODA meetings, and I began learning how to set boundaries. Some of this growth was slow, but it was happening. And with a lot of work, I got past my fear of going back to school. So in May of 2007, I graduated from Pacific Oaks College with all A's and 1 B, and I was 61 years old. That was another miracle. I was the oldest person in all my classes, including my instructors. And that was amazing to me. But one day at a time, one lesson at a time, one class at a time, I was able to make it through. And this was all because of my work in this program. So these are highlights of my recovery. My journey was not perfect, because I did chronically slip for many years. So the last few months left of school, I foolishly left program, only to find that within a few months, my bulimic behavior and mindset was coming back. That scared the bejeebus out of me, so I flew back to program. I got a new sponsor, and I have been diligently working program since June 28th of 2006. So today, is my life perfect? Of course not. My life is good. Today I have serenity. Today I have peace. And today I know how to work the tools so that I can maintain those things in my life. Not every moment do I have peace and serenity. Of course not. But I have tools. And I have people in this program who support me through my day-to-day ups and downs. And most of all, I have and I am aware of my connection with God. That is a total miracle. So, you know, my journey continues as it will until I leave this earth. It will. So I'm saying to you, thank you for the opportunity to share highlights of my recovery. I am just so blessed to be a part of this program. I'm so totally blessed. My name is Tana. I am a recovering compulsive overeater, a recovering bulimic. I live in Los Angeles, and that is Pacific Standard Time. My telephone number is area code 310-559-1191. Again, my telephone number is area code 310-559-1191, and that's Pacific Standard Time. Thank you again for the opportunity to be a part of this workshop. Thank you.
Thank you, Tana, and thanks for your wonderful service on this committee.
You're welcome.
Next is Leanne.
Hi, Cheryl. Leanne, compulsive eater.
Hi, Leanne.
Hi, and thank you so much. I feel so blessed that I was involved and able to participate in this today. I came into the program on May Day of 1991 and only came, like everyone else, to lose the weight. I don't intend to go through my food log today because I really choose to live in the present that I have today. And I would rather share what has happened to me since I came in. Suffice it to say that my family always said that I was a touch-me-not, don't touch her, you don't get that close to her. I had the brick wall build up pretty high. And through this program and through my sponsor and the Eskimos in these rooms, I have been able to take those bricks out one day at a time and build my foundation for which I live. For that, I'm very, very grateful. I was told when I came into this program that more would be revealed. And I, of course, knew that there would be a lot more revealed because I was going to show everybody and teach everybody how to live. But, of course, I've learned that that's not the facts. And today I have no desire to do that. Today I only pray that what I have will help another person. And in the 12 and 12 it says, how shall we come to terms with seeming failure or success? Can we now accept and adjust to either without despair or pride? Can we accept poverty, sickness, loneliness, and bereavement with courage and serenity? You know, I have learned to do that through this program. I have learned that I will have trials, and that's what life is. I will have difficulties. That's what life is. But my attitude and the way it has changed through the years is 180 degrees. And today I know that nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Absolutely nothing. Page 449. I've lived by that for a long, long time, and I'm seeing more and more miracles happen in my life as long as I stay close to my higher power, as long as I trust my higher power and get out of his way. I, for a long time, have had a plaque in my bedroom that says, Lord, help me to remember that nothing is going to happen to me today that together you and I can't handle. And it was a gradual process for me to let go of control I never had but thought I did. But I was able to let go of control. I continue to let go of the control. And the more I see, the more willing I am to let go. I don't think that it's something that happens for most of us in a heartbeat. I believe it's a process. And it's taken me almost 20 years to get where I am today. But you know, I'm blessed because God has given me that 20 years to learn. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. Used to be I wouldn't hug people. I wouldn't let them get too close to me. And through this program and with my higher power, I've been able to give sermons on hugging. And I've been able to pass it on. The reading that I had the other day I thought was interesting. And it was about an American missionaries that went over to Africa, and they met up with African missionaries. And they were walking to the next town. And the Americans kept saying, come on, let's go, come on, let's go, let's go. And they pushed all day long. And they slept that night, and the next morning the Americans said, we're making good progress, let's go. And the Africans sat down. And they said, what's wrong? We've got to get on the road. And they said, no. We hurried too much yesterday, and today we have to stop and wait for our souls to catch up to our bodies. And you know, the process I've had to go through. I've had to stop. I've had to call the halt and wait for my soul to catch up to my body. And it's a joy to be able to do that. And it's a joy to remember that I practice positive thinking. And when I practice my positive thinking, so often it comes natural. And instead of looking at the negative, I get to look at the positive. I get to look back on my life at the things I thought were so bad and so awful. And they've turned out to be miracles. And they've turned out to be something that I'm able to use to help another person who's suffering. What a gift. What a beautiful gift that I've been given. And I'm grateful that I've had the miracles that I've had in this program and in my life. And I've shared many times that today I'm out to change my world, my corner of the world. I want to change the corner that I live in. I don't know too many people that can go down to the corner and get coffee and have the clerks in there call you by name, give you a hug, tell you their life story, ask you to pray for them because they think you have a connection to God. That's a miracle. That's a real gift. And I feel very blessed. You know, I go to different stores and people in our area say, have a good day, have a nice day. And I say, thank you. I wish for you the same, and you've helped to make mine better. That's how I want to live my life today. I want to live this program because this program gave me life. I want to give back what has been given to me. So I like to live to change my corner of the world so that maybe, just maybe, they'll make their corner of the world better. And maybe then we can change the world. And I'll change it one day at a time with my higher power's help. This is how I usually end when I speak, and I'd like to finish it with this. It's from the Big Book. I'm rated as a modestly successful woman. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Thank you for letting me share, and I love you all. My name is Leanne. I am in Pacific Time, 909-595-7684. That's 909-595-7684.
Thank you, Leanne. Richard, next.
Hi, I'm Richard. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Richard.
Okay. I have a new cell phone, and I inadvertently hit the mute button with my cheek, so I'm glad for that. I'm Richard, and I'm a compulsive eater and a very, very grateful member of CEA How these past 7-plus years. I have been able to maintain a 110-pound weight loss in these past 7 years, and I know that I can't do this by myself, that I have to make my abstinence about the people of this fellowship. When I came into these rooms, I had gone to my home group of AA in January, or actually December of 2002, after having had a very, very difficult time in my early sobriety. And at that time, I was living by the book Living Sober, which suggested carrying a certain substance with us at all times, because that was a way to avoid having a drink. But, you know, instead of one of those things, I carry a whole bag or, you know, a whole carton or whatever, and because that's the way that I was. And one night I had just gone from bodega to bakery to restaurant to grocery store back to another bodega, and just and like this treadmill of going after the stuff that I didn't need, and you know, that was really not good for me. The first bite was too many, and the bazillion that I would have after that first bite were never, ever enough. So I was led to see how, and I was kicking and screaming the entire time. But even so, I saw something in the people that were in that room. I saw a humor. I saw a serenity. I felt a warmth. I wasn't so shut down that I couldn't feel that. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. I tried getting a sponsor, fired him after 3 days, and tried to do it myself. I white-knuckled it for 30 days, and then, you know, I slipped, and for another month, I got, I just sort of tried to do the best I could, but, you know, I was still out there. And then a person made a mistake and called a different Richard, or wanted to call a different Richard, but got me, and we had a nice little conversation. It happened to be my birthday, and that one conversation set me on my path. I came back to a CHOW meeting, and on March 9th of 2003, I started my abstinence, which I have been able to maintain ever since, with a new sponsor who was challenging, but, you know, it was what I needed. I needed a little bit of a firmer hand with the structure, although one who at least could listen to when I could speak from my heart, which was problematical at certain times. But it was a good thing in the long run. My recovery has had a lot of highlights. I have to say that CHOW, and after some time in my first few months, I don't remember exactly whether it was at the 5 or 6 month mark, but I recognized for the first time that I could feel joy, even after an event that was really, really, it should have been painful. I found out that I maxed out a credit card in an embarrassing way in line at a checkout counter. And I was able to just be present to say some stuff that you know, how to proceed. It wasn't me, that was God talking, and I just was able to just go through the rest of my day going, wow, I feel totally joyful after having done that. I'm so totally amazed that I can feel joy after a difficult event. And I've been able to undertake a move within recovery, move from New York City up to upstate New York, where I met somebody and I got a job in an apartment on the same day, and people marveled at how quick that was. It's a bittersweet thing today because that relationship is in the process of ending, and I'm going through a lot of feelings. I'm going to be facing a lot of changes, but I also have come to understand through the working of this program and some of my own ups and downs with having sponsors come and go, and I'm working with a sponsor now who's I'm very, very grateful for. And I talk with him every day. I talk with him when things come up as needed. And I know that this is the program that will carry me through whatever I may be experiencing. This has been a difficult summer for me. I lost my dad at the beginning of the summer, And now I'm in the process of this breakup, and it looks like I'm probably going to have to move. But one of the miracles of this fellowship is that I've embarked on a quest for myself of integration and wholeness, and one by one, the things that get in the way of that would have me identify with my brokenness, which is basically to be in that same state that I was when I was into the food, they are leaving me. I had been a part of a theater group that operates at a dysfunctional level, and I was able to just say, I need a break. A boss that had been capitalizing upon my codependence has also left. I have a different boss now, but I'm also realizing that this line of work doesn't meet my spirit, and I'm praying for the readiness and the willingness to be able to do whatever is necessary to change my situation. In recovery, I also found a relationship to a higher power, or in my case, multiple higher powers, because I've discovered partly through the momentum, very much through other people in the rooms, the many in the one and the one in the many. That seems to be something that's important to my spiritual and religious understanding of what miracles can operate within our lives. And actually, some people within the rooms introduced me to what has become my spiritual exploration. When they heard me share at a meditation meeting that I had started in New York City, and even though I'm no longer there, the meditation meeting does continue. It is a legacy that I've been able to it's not my meeting, needless to say, because I'm no longer there, but it's a good thing to have started something that continues. And as has been said, thank you. As has been said here, I can't keep anything unless I give it away. The phone bridge meetings are a lifeline for me. If we don't have a See How meeting up here, I had a hope to start one with a fellow that was up here for a while, but he has since left the fellowship, and I'm not exactly sure. Things are so much in flux. I don't know, honestly, if I will end up staying in this region or not. I'm in upstate New York. Right now it feels that I will, but one day at a time. It's God's will, not my will. It's God's time, not my time. All that I do is show up to meetings, talk to people in the rooms. I sponsor two, maybe three people now. I have a sponsor. I work my food program. I'm always answering questions or doing writings. And now I'm using these tools as a loom for my entire life. I really firmly believe in practicing these principles in all my affairs. And I've actually discovered a movement that started in England that is about taking 12-step ideas and applying them to municipal resilience. I'm sort of thinking of the third tradition about how we have our membership policy is that the only requirement is a desire to stop our compulsive eating. Well, that can apply in another context. And that is how I approach everything in my life now. I am so grateful for the tools. I can't speak enough about anonymity. I don't know who any of you are. I can get sort of vague pictures of you based on your voices, but you know, I could be totally off base. And in the 12th tradition, it talks about our anonymity providing a protective mantle for us to come under in order to feel safe, in order to make the transformations that need to take place in recovery, because we are shedding an old skin here, and that's a painful process. And, you know, we need safety even as we go through these uncomfortable things. I need the safety of these rooms to be able to stay abstinent as I go through this breakup and whatever ensues therefrom. My name is Richard. I'm a compulsive eater, very grateful member of CEA How. East Coast time, my phone number, 518-441-2876. East Coast time, 518-441-2876. And thank you. I'm so honored to be giving this service.
Thank you, Richard. We have Marcia next.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marcia. I am a recovering compulsive overeater. I have a recommitment date of November 29, 2007. I am a full-service sponsor, maintaining 104-pound weight loss. And as I say this, I am getting overcome with emotion. This is an absolute honor and a privilege to be asked to share my story again. It makes me feel no longer invisible. And I thank you for seeing me and for hearing me and wanting to share your time with me. You know, for so many years, I felt like I just faded into the background. And the larger I became, the more invisible I became. And if somebody would have told me 3 years ago, I would have been, that I would be here today and that I would be in a place of recovery emotionally, physically, and spiritually, I would have thought they were out of their minds. But the one that was out of their mind was me. And it was because my mind was disease-ridden with food. And I guess the miracles have happened, but they didn't happen overnight, and they continue to happen. And so what I understand this to be is I'm going to tell you my story because I didn't just get here. So my story begins with believing that I have a disposition to addiction. I believe that my monster had lied in wait and waited until I was down and vulnerable before overcoming me, before taking me over. In all my being. My monster is evil. He wants me dead, and he tried to kill me, but he lost, and my higher power won. He's evil, and she is good. My first recollection of having a thing with food was when I was probably about 6 years old. We lived in the city. My father used to work on Saturday nights as he was going for his degree, and I had two little sisters, and my mom spent some real special time with me, being the oldest. And she used to run to the store on a Saturday night and get the New York Times and leave me with my two younger sisters and the dogs. And she left me one night, not only with my dog, but with a bowl of big, beautiful fruit. And I ate it all, and I threw the pits down the toilet. Somehow, at 6 years old, I knew that was just not right. And when she asked me about it, I said, I don't know who ate them. And I laugh now as I think about it because I don't know who I think I was kidding. But it was my first compulsion and my first lie surrounding food. At 9 years old or thereabout, my mother was diagnosed with MS, and it was a very tough year, a very tough summer the first year she got stricken. My sisters were 4 and 5, and we used to have to stay with my grandparents in a luncheonette of all places. And I do remember having to make decisions surrounding food, but what I remember most was the emptiness, the loneliness, and I wanted to be a little girl again. And I wasn't. Over the years, obviously I started to grow up. My father ran the house. He did the best he could. But the house was filled with a loneliness and an emptiness, and it just wasn't, there was just no connection there. When the 60s came, I dove right in. I loved the movement. I loved everything about it. And I found my love in 1969. We experimented with everything from sex to drugs to rock and roll. We were very much in love. Our world was rocked when his number was called in the lottery to be drafted. Everything we believed in was shaken when he left for Vietnam. I never saw him again alive. He was killed after only being in country for 92 days. That was the beginning and the end for me. I was in such pain, I didn't know how to deal with it. My monster waited, and he had taken me down. I wasn't addicted to drugs, which I did, and I wasn't addicted to alcohol. I turned to food with a vengeance. For 38 years, I've gone up and down in weight. Amazingly, while I was in and out of the food, I had a successful career. How did I function? Well, my work was part of my addiction. It kept me detached emotionally, and it soothed my ego. To manage my weight over the years, I tried diet pills, Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, OA too, and fasting. My favorite was fasting and binging. Each diet brought me results, but I was never able to maintain. Fasting and binging became a way of life for me, always thinking there was something wrong with me. Why couldn't I control myself? What was wrong with me? What is it that I'm missing? Where was my willpower? And on and on and on, I beat the hell out of myself. Well, fast forward to see how. I bridged in when I lost some of the weight after fasting. I went from 129 to 166 pounds in weeks. I didn't know how see how really was. I heard about it at an OA meeting. I stayed for 30-plus days. Unfortunately, I was not ready. I left, and I came back in 2007 at 225 pounds. I am 5'1". I was so sad, and I was so full of I was angry at myself, and I was so embarrassed about what I had done to myself. And I just felt horrible. I felt miserable, and I went to my sisters that year for Thanksgiving, and I say this all the time. I thought I saw disappointment in my dad's eyes, but it really was my reflection. And this was my bottom. And what happened is I dialed in, and ironically, my first sponsor was the one doing the fellowship at the meeting again, and there she was for me again. How lucky was I that she was there doing that service. Anyway, I decided to do whatever she told me to do, and the first miracle was I became abstinent. The cravings were lifted. I did 90 meetings in 90 days. I did my writing. I worked my tools, as I still do, not perfectly. The weight came off. My mind began to open, and I began to hear what was being said, and I started to live for the first time in 35 years. I began to trust, and I began to believe in a power greater than myself. Today, I am 59 years old. I wear a size 6. I have 33 months of abstinence, and I am maintaining 104-pound weight loss. I have a sponsor who I adore, a higher power that I believe has given me a chance at living life. I am humbled by the love and the gratitude I have for this program.
2 minutes.
Thank you. The program, in return, has loved me back. It has given me several gifts. I have recovered physically, no more blood pressure or cholesterol meds. I am healthy. What a blessing. My emotional and spiritual recovery are works in progress. I get stronger each day as the puzzle comes together. Why? I believe it is because I have surrendered, and I am willing to do anything and go to any length for this sanity. Besides, as I always like to say, and my first sponsor taught me this, my higher power sprinkles fairy dust on me each day with life. So thank you for this gift. And with that, I passed.
Pass. Thank you, Marcia. Can we have your number, please?
My number is 609-886-2812. 609-886-2812.
And what time zone is that?
Eastern.
Eastern. Thank you very much. Okay, next is Marion.
Oh, nope.
Marion, can you hit star 6, please?
Hi, this is Marion, food addict and compulsive eater. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, good. I think I was muted by accident. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Marion, food addict and compulsive eater. I'm really grateful to be here and see how.
No.
What, you can't hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. I want to talk about love today in the context of what I was like, what happened to change me, and what I'm like now. I came into a hell room in May of 1992, absolutely filled with self-hatred and bitterness and resentment and judgment and full of doubt and self-criticism and hopelessness. I had fallen in love and was married, and it was disastrous. You know, it was, it brought me to my knees, brought me to the bottom, an emotional and spiritual bankruptcy. I wasn't right away aware that I had food issues, but God brought me into this room, and nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And so I began to heal here. I began to look at myself. I began to learn about love, even though I was very confused about it. I was very confused about love, along with a lot of other terms, most of the emotional terms that I heard. I found very confusing because I haven't been given really great examples. And I humbly began to learn, and I experienced a lot of love, even though I didn't realize it. I didn't have a clue how protected, how guarded I was, how not only did I have a layer of fat and around my body, I had a wall, a very thick wall around my heart. And I think I've used compulsive eating and other compulsive behaviors through my life to protect myself from feeling hurt, even though it didn't work. It's like taking a hammer and smashing myself on the head to stop a headache. It doesn't work, and yet I continue to do it over and over. I would push people away, end relationships, rather than go through the discomfort of having a conversation with them, or being honest and vulnerable about what I was feeling. And I didn't really say to anybody, I love you. And I wasn't very demonstrative. And in my family, we didn't do that. You know, we never hugged or told each other we loved each other until all the kids were adults. And I don't know what shifted there. I know that for me, what shifted is I came into recovery. So I came into recovery in love, but not even realizing it, I don't think. You know, and then as a result of being in love, I was deeply, deeply hurt by this relationship. And that happened at a time when God also brought Howe into my life, or see Howe, away Howe. And so I had the tools right when I needed them to cope with a serious loss and to begin to feel deeply, instead of compulsively being busy or eating or whatever else I do. And that was a choice. I remember so vividly, I was in recovery about a year and a half, and everything just sort of exploded around the marriage. And I stayed abstinent, but I shut down, and my body began to let me know on no uncertain terms that I needed to process the feelings. I had shooting pains in different parts of my body, and it was a terrifying choice. You know, because even though I'd been in recovery a little while, I hadn't really experienced being vulnerable. I was, you know, I went into recovery kind of with the same attitudes I approached my life, like, oh, I'm okay, I'm doing well, I'm working everything well, how are you, how can I help you? And I tried to maintain this image of, oh, I got it. Didn't want to be a beginner. I didn't want to not know how to do things. I didn't want to be vulnerable in front of other people. And that's one of the reasons I found it so difficult to love. Love involves vulnerability. Anyway, I'll fast forward. As I stayed in program and I began to get some practice feeling these intense, painful feelings and not dying, I think that's how irrational my fear was, but that's kind of what it boiled down to, that I would be annihilated if I felt discomfort or disappointment or, you know, rejection or any of these uncomfortable feelings, or if I shared anger, someone would leave immediately. I always had the, I mean, not even a worst-case scenario. I just confused it with annihilation, and I lived. I survived feeling those feelings. And then I began to use the tool in more subtle levels, learning how to communicate more effectively with people and to love myself, you know, and the love, I think, grew initially out of the actions. You know, I needed to act my way into right feeling. And the actions of staying abstinent, reaching out to others, showing up at meetings, using the tools in my life are very self-loving actions. And being a sponsor and being of service, I initially did these because I needed to, and not even so much because I was told to, because I'm rebellious to the core. But if it was going to help me stay abstinent, I would do it. The joy of service is something that I learned with experience. You know, that it opens my heart being of service to others. So the fellowship gave me lots of opportunities to learn how to love by acting, even before I felt it, or acting when I wasn't feeling loving. And I'm learning that that's a real mature behavior, to be loving even when I don't necessarily feel it. And I want to grow up. I want to have mature, loving relationships with people. I mean, I was brought to my knees and into recovery by the pain of a really dysfunctional, painful relationship. And I've been on a path ever since to learn how to have better relationships. A huge relationship for me has been with my higher power. I didn't really have one when I first came in. I prayed a couple times. Once in the 80s, I remember I was in dire need. And I really prayed hard if God would get me out of this major scrape, that, you know, I'd stay in touch more frequently. And I didn't. I stayed in touch, you know, desperately needed it. And somehow I must have prayed without knowing it, and God brought me in to see how in 92. And then it began, my life changed, I mean, radically. Higher power was not even on the radar screen, or relationship with it. And indeed, slowing down for relationships in general was something that seemed non-productive and a waste of time. And the foundation for my life is now the spiritual journey I'm on that is grounded in the 12 steps. And I pray throughout the day, and I'm totally imperfect at showing up for this relationship with my higher power. But I do it the best I can. And I've learned about love. I had a very fear-based relationship. Even though I didn't have much of a relationship, my beliefs were fear-based. And it took me a long time to realize that. The first time I was working through steps, and I encountered step two. Oh, I believe in God. Check, next. You know, no, not at all. You know, I really needed to spend a lot of time reflecting on my relationship with my higher power and learning from it and accepting that I had a really fear-based attitude and very negative beliefs about what God was and what his will for me was. And the concept of a loving higher power was...
2 minutes.
Concept, thank you. Was revelatory to me. You know, but so I continue to have a relationship with my higher power that evolved, and I'm becoming more willing to accept that it is a loving higher power and to have a trust and faith in it. And then with other people, I remember the first time that I felt my heart expand and I shared in a meeting. It was like the Grinch when from that little Sue store, where he talked to, when the Grinch stole Christmas, when the fellow's heart just swells and swells and boing, he busts through the boundaries that are, you know, boxing in his heart. And I felt that happen. I mean, I like it. And it was very exciting and very, very exciting. And I felt it repeatedly through the year when I am present and I am slowed down and I am willing to just stay in the moment and be with people and to be generous, to not worry about and be afraid of how I'm going to be hurt or if I'm going to have enough money or are they taking advantage of me or all those negative, fearful things with which I used to approach relationships and still can. You know, but when I open to just witnessing a person as they are, my heart swells, you know, and it continues to. It's just amazing how big my heart can be at times, and I want to help it keep growing. And when I am sponsored with such unconditional love as I've received here in the program and experience and witness the love and support and fellowship that is present here in Seattle, and I see it increasingly in other areas of my life, I know that my own capacity for love continues to grow. And in terms of a special relationship, an intimate relationship, going back to being hurt, you know, really opening up in love means that I will get hurt. And I don't need to protect myself from that. You know, the 12 steps and the tools provide me what I need to talk about feeling hurt. You know, I don't have to slam my head with a hammer to, you know, to try and protect myself from being hurt. I have what I need here to, thanks, to be in that kind of a mature, loving relationship as long as I stay up. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be of service. And my name is Marion. I live in New York City. That's Eastern Time. And my cell phone number, which is the Verizon, is 201-725-0251. That's 201-725-0251.
Thank you, Marion. And Lori's next, please. Lori, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. It took me a second to get unmuted.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Cheryl, for letting me, for asking me to speak. And it's very funny. I misunderstood the topic and thought I was supposed to share on another kind of share that I'd given. So I had it all written out. And then this morning I found when I talked to Cheryl that, no, this is a qualification workshop. And I said, oh, well, I give up. I'm going to let what comes out, because I didn't really have time to write any more stuff down. It's really a privilege to have been asked. I mean, when I'm listening to all these speakers, the wonderful people that I've enjoyed listening to meetings for, you know, a number of 24 hours now. So I feel very honored to be included in that group. A little bit of my history is that I remember the first time that I vividly remember compulsively eating, I was about 5 or 6. And I was playing in our front yard, and I was talking to myself as usual. I still talk to myself. And all of a sudden, I was aware of this presence behind me that just, it was a strange presence. And I looked over my shoulder, and there was a dog whose head was as high as mine. I mean, it was huge. And as I look back on it now, I'm pretty sure it was a Great Dane and probably the Great Dane that belonged to a friend of my brother's. And I ran into the house screaming. I was so terrified. The dog didn't do anything. It just sat there. And I was just, I've never seen anything like this. It looked like a monster to me. So I ran in the house, sat down on the couch, and a woman came to me. I don't remember the face. All I could see was what I could see sitting down on a couch. That was her hands and her body. and she handed me a 1-pound bag of sugary stuff and walked out of the room. And I just remember feeling, "What? I don't get this. You know, I'm crying, I'm sobbing, there's this monster out in my front yard, and I get this 1-pound bag of sugary stuff." Well, I was in such a state that I ate the entire bag. And I remember feeling numb, and I remember just feeling kind of knocked out, and I still didn't get why I had been given that when I was terrified and scared. And the woman came back, I still don't know if it was my mom, if it was a sister, a babysitter, and was horrified that I had done this. But I remember that being the first time that I associated with uncontrollable feelings, knock it back with sugar, and numb. I remember that. And I went off and on like that with my food until the age of about 14. I sometimes would be out of control with food. Other times, especially during the summertime, I would rather swim and go out on our boat and roller skate and do all that good stuff. So my weight would be kind of normal in the summertime. In the winter, I would start eating, especially my mother would start doing this baking around Halloween, and it wouldn't stop until after January 1st. And I partook of all her baking, and she liked that to a point. But then she had to start hiding food from me. And, you know, she never sat down with me and said, "Honey, I think you have a problem with certain foods." It was just kind of an unspoken thing in my house that when she brought something home and she didn't want me to have it, it went way up high in the cupboards or went way down below behind great big heavy pots and pans, not realizing that I was a little thing and I could climb up on the counters and get what was high up in the cupboards and the cabinets, and I could climb below and get in between the pots and pans and get that stuff out too. And it was a battle. It was a battle at the dinner table. I would eat my portion, I would eat a second portion, I would eat a third portion, and the serving plate had to be taken off the table or I'd start eating off of that. My brothers and sisters made fun of me for being fat, made fun of me for eating the way I ate. I was mortified about my weight. My mother would only dress me in certain kinds of clothes because other kinds of clothes made me look overweight or pudgy or chunky. We didn't use the word fat with me. We just used pudgy, chunky, and overweight. And I finally learned about the age of 12 or 11, because my father was a doctor. He said, "If you just eat 3 meals a day with nothing in between and limit yourself to one dessert each meal, you'll lose weight." So I did that. For about 2 years, I white-knuckled food. I couldn't wait to get from one meal to the next because that's all I was getting with my meals. And I did get down to a normal size. And then about the age of 13 or 14, I decided to start eliminating one more food and one more food and one more food. I decided it would be a good idea to start living on 500 calories a day. I don't know where I got that from, but I thought it was a good idea. And I wanted the world to leave me alone while I did that. And in the meantime, I was having to walk 2 miles to school and 2 miles back. And needless to say, I was dropping too much weight. And I got put into a hospital, and their basic treatment for me was eat whatever you want, whenever you want, whatever we put in front of you, whatever you want to order, have as much as you want of it. Nobody said anything about compulsive eating being a disease. They did use the words anorexia. But they didn't care as long as I gained weight. I did gain the weight, and then I was horrified because when I got out of the hospital, I couldn't stop eating. So I learned to exercise as much as I ate to try to keep my weight down. And slowly and slowly and slowly over the years, I was losing the battle. I would exercise a lot. I would eat more. And my eating was out of control until I came to Overeaters Anonymous in 1983. I think it was. And I got abstinent, and I lost my abstinence. I got abstinent, I lost my abstinence, got abstinent, lost my abstinence. And the thing is, I got abstinent and lost my weight and didn't know what to do when I got back down to a normal weight because everybody around me by that time had lost their abstinence. I was the only abstinent one left living in a little isolated town in Idaho. And I stumbled around, and finally I found an abstinence for about a year and a half that worked for me, except I was still about maybe 10 pounds underweight, and people would give me a bad time for that. So it just seemed no matter where I was with my weight, people were giving me a bad time for the way I ate and a bad time for the way I looked. That was what I perceived. And I went into a treatment center about 1983-84 and started cheating behind the treatment center's back, started compulsively exercising, started eating on the fly, and wound up with a great big explosion and a terrible, terrible, terrible relapse, not only into the addiction but into the pits of insanity, just terrible, terrible bouts of insanity. And this program hasn't just been about weight and food for me. When I compulsively overeat or when I screw around with my food and try to start controlling it again in any way that's not a set up arranged food plan with a sponsor, weighed and measured, my sanity starts going away. And there's people on this phone line, I've heard them share, who have worked with me and who kind of know of what I speak, even though that has happened to me also abstinent. I was abstinent for about, I came to see how. I was in OA for a number of years, and I would be abstinent for about a year and a half, and then I'd lose my abstinence. I was abstinent for 3 years, and I lost my abstinence. And it had to do with a lack of support. It had to do with a lack of people around me that were abstinent. You can't sponsor yourself for very long. You really can't. So I finally came to see how in July of 1993, I was abstinent in OA with a dietitian's food plan. It was the diabetic food exchange, even though I'm not diabetic, and it was working for me. But I didn't have any, thank you very much. I had no sponsors that were willing to sponsor me the way in OA. So I came here and I found the kind of sponsorship and the kind of guidelines that I needed and that worked for me. I was abstinent for probably about 7 or 10 years, back-to-back abstinence. And I had a relapse of some chronic illnesses that I have, and I lost that abstinence. I've been abstinent again for 3 years and 4 months. I could go on and on with this program, but what I will say is today I have a sponsor. She's very strict, and I'm really, really grateful for that. I call her on time every day, and when I'm like a minute or two late, she goes, I wondered what happened to you. And she pulls my covers on me, not just with food, but she pulls my covers on me with my character defects. I'm working on my 8th step right now, and she just doesn't let anything get past her. And sometimes I get off the phone and I go, geez, I mean, I can't get away with anything. But I really feel a recovery happening and a possibility of my getting out of really old, deep set patterns of behavior through some very structured sponsoring that is really, really helping me. I had a sponsor in this program that saw me through a time of horrible anxiety, and God bless her for it, because nobody else, I don't think, would have done that. She allowed me to call her several times a day, and things got better with some outside help. I did have to seek outside help for that, and I then became, because of certain circumstances, I came to work with this sponsor I've got now, and my program works for me today as long as I weigh and measure my food, I write it down, I call it in, I commit to it, and I work the steps and I work the tools. I work all 7 tools on a daily basis, no matter what, even if it's 11:30 at night when I'm making that last outreach call, which it has been sometimes. So I'm very, very grateful for these phone bridge meetings, because now I'm living in a place, I was living in the Los Angeles area, and now I'm living in a place in Ohio where closest meeting is an hour and a half away, and it's hard for me to get into transportation because I use a wheelchair and a walker to get around. So I have these phone bridge meetings, and I'm eternally grateful for the people who started them and the people that keep them going. They work for me today, and I know that that's all I've got today is a one day at a time abstinence, and I'm very grateful for it. I'm grateful for everybody on these phone bridges. And I think I'm just about out of time, so thank you for letting me share. Oh, my phone number. Huh. My phone number is 562-624-1928. Again, that's 562-624-1928. That's a Verizon cell, and it's a safe Verizon cell because there's nobody that answers it but me. And I'm now on Eastern Standard Time, although that's a specific number, but I'm in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. So thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Next is Nanette.
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Annette.
Okay. Are we still okay for time, Cheryl?
Just about. Maybe 15 is fine if you can.
Okay. I'll go fast. My name is Nanette, and my absence date in CHOW is December 26, 2008. I've lost 25 CHOW pounds and 97 pounds altogether. I came to CHOW because I, even in 12-step recovery, I could not maintain my weight loss. I had lost a lot of weight, but I could not keep it off. And that's why I came. I came because God directed me here. I truly believe that. What I'm so excited to share with you today is something that truly is a highlight of my own recovery, and that is my understanding that God is willing to talk to me all day long. If I get up in the morning and invite him through prayer and meditation and study to be with me through the day, he is with me through the day. And he sends me messages. One little example of this, and then I'm going to give a big example, is that one day I came home from a compulsive eaters meeting, and my daughter called me on the phone, and she was at I called her. She was at some kind of a water slide park with all of her kids. And all of a sudden, over the phone, she said, she was calling out to her little boy, she said, "T, don't drink out of your shoe. You don't have to drink out of your shoe." And I just felt God say, "You don't either. You know, that's a desperate little boy who drinks out of his shoe." And whenever I am tempted to break my abstinence, I think, "Nanette, don't drink out of your shoe. There's a better way." Anyway, I really have come to know that my recovery and my working of these steps has everything to do with my belief in God, which I've always believed in God, but even more with my belief that he believes in me. And what I learned early in recovery is that he wants to talk to me all day long, and he will talk to me all day long, and that the things that happen to me in my life have meaning, and they send little messages from him. So I'm going to share a little an event that happened to me early in recovery. Early in recovery, I planned with a friend of mine that we would climb a mountain that is in my front yard. The name of the mountain is Timpanogos. And it's a very tall mountain, and it's a very, very long hike. Well, my friend, she was training for the Chicago Marathon. And every time I'd see her, she'd said, are you getting ready to climb the mountain? Well, she was training for the marathon, and this is what I was doing. I was walking around the block every day a few times with my mom. That's how I trained. Well, I was petrified to go on this hike, and she kept asking me if I was ready. And finally, in early October, I mean, the leaves had turned and were starting to fall, and there had been a first snow on this mountain. And as far as I could tell from my part of the mountain, it was all melted off. So we decided early on an October morning to take this hike. And we got there early, early in the morning. And the first thing that happened is we started hiking, and we hiked for about 45 minutes. And pretty soon she said to me, "Nanette, I think we're on the wrong trail. I think that this trail is not going up this mountain. I think this is the Great Western Trail. And if we stay on this trail, we will end up in New Mexico." Well, I live in Utah, so that would be quite a detour. And when she said that, I felt my higher power say to me, "Nanette, you can turn around at any time. You do not, when you get off the path, when if you get off the recovery path, you do not have to go clear to New Mexico. You can turn around at any time." That's the first lesson I learned. The next thing I learned was to enjoy the trail. You know, I was so nervous about this whole thing. I just kept looking at the path, looking at my feet, looking at the path, looking at my path, looking at the path. And my friend would stop every once in a while, and she'd say, "Nanette, look at the view. It is beautiful up here. It is beautiful up here." You know, that's what a good sponsor does. She stops us along the way and says, "Look how far you've come, and look how wonderful it is where we've arrived." So enjoy the view. We have to enjoy the view. This is a lifelong commitment. Recovery from addiction of any kind is a lifelong work. And I'm committed to enjoying it, to enjoying the view. Now, as we went along, we started to recognize, well, I started to recognize that I had not trained properly. And in the morning, the night before, I had asked her, I said, what kind of shoes should I wear? And she said, just wear your most comfortable shoes. So that's what I did. I wore these tennis shoes that I'd walked around the block 7,000 times in. And, man, as we hiked along, my legs got so, so tired. And the weather was getting worse. And the little icy patches that were on the trail that we thought would melt along the way, they didn't melt. And I was in, you know, I did not have good equipment. And, you know, what I felt God liken this to me in recovery was that, well, I shared with you that I could not maintain my weight loss, and it wasn't because I hadn't applied the steps to my life. It was because of a lack of proper equipment, a proper sponsor, a proper way of calling in every day, proper weights and measures for my food, a plan for abstinence, outreach calls. All those things were missing from my program previously, and I could not maintain my weight loss without proper equipment. And these, I'll tell you in a minute, these little slick bottom tennis shoes were not what I needed on this hike. It got so kind of weathery that we knew we couldn't go clear to the top. It gets quite windy at the top of this mountain, and you know, you have to be pretty sure-footed. We finally got to a little shed where we could sit down, and I had brought some dry socks. By this time, my socks were wet with the water and the snow and the ice that was on the path. And we sat down, and we changed our shoes, and it was getting late in the afternoon. We started in the dark, and it was getting to be in the afternoon, and I was starting to feel very frightened that I could not make it off this mountain. And we started down, and I'll tell you, this precious person who had trained for the Chicago Marathon, she runs this mountain. She can run to the top and back. And I liken that unto my sponsor. My sponsor has 8 years, 8 or 9 years of back-to-back abstinence. I mean, she's a Chicago marathoner as far as I'm concerned, as far as See How goes. And yet she's willing to hang with me every day as I go through the ins and outs of staying abstinent in this program. That's how my friend was for me. Anyway, she said, we got to start back down or it's going to be really dark when we finish this hike. So we started back down. And as I walked, I could only take 3 or 4 steps, and then I would fall. And then I would take 3 or 4 more steps, and then I would fall. And this went on for so long that I was becoming very frightened. I thought, and every time I fell, this precious mountain sponsor for me would pick me up by the hand. And she'd say, come on, we can do this, and we'd take a few more steps. The equipment I had just was not what I needed. Well, one of the times when I fell flat down, I went to get up, and as I looked out in front of me, there was a man's hand. And I thought, I saw these big boots, big hiking boots with big treads on them, and this big hand. And I thought, oh, that's great. This guy's shaking everybody's hand as he runs down the mountain. Anyway, I put my hand out to shake his hand, and he held my hand, and he said, no, you have taken more steps on this mountain today than anybody. I don't know how he knew that. Had he been watching me? I don't know. He said, I'm going to help you get off this mountain. And for the next 3 hours, at least 3 hours, I held onto his backpack, or I held onto his waist, and I'd sidestep through the snowy parts. you know, I don't even know who this man is. I can't find him today. But as I was walking, I felt my higher power say, this man is like me, and this mountain is like addiction, and I can help you off this mountain. I know you. I absolutely know you. I love you, and I am powerful enough for you, and I can help you off this mountain. And for hours we went like this, hours and hours. He did for me what my sponsor could not do for me. And as we got down to where it was kind of getting sunny again, he said, you know what, I think you're going to be okay. I'm going to leave you with your sponsor. And he disappeared. And by this point, my legs hurt so bad. I felt with every step, like my knees were going to break. And the last lesson I learned as I walked out of this canyon, as I walked out, you know, the sun was just setting, so it's that time of day where it's really kind of bright, the way it shines. And there were people climbing up the mountain. There were people climbing up that were going to go camp. There was a girl climbing up. She had flip-flops on. And there I was. I looked like I was coming out of a war or something. I could barely walk. I wanted to just lay down on that path and fall asleep. And as they looked at me kind of funny, they looked at me like, well, what's wrong with you? Where have you been? And at that point in time, I determined that I would try with all my heart not to judge people, because I have no idea how many steps they've taken on the mountain. I have no idea how hard their lives have been. I think as we share with each other on See How Phone Bridge, we do come to know a little bit of what people have suffered and what their trials in this life have been. But I want to not be somebody who judges. Anyway, this experience and thousands of other little experiences that I've had and that I've allowed the Lord to speak with me about, and that I take notes too. You know, when I have experiences where I think I'm learning something, I write about it and I learn more. So just in closing, I just want to say that I absolutely know he loves every one of us. I know that he's very, very interested in our progress, and that he does have all power, and he does have the ability to give us the very best direction that we could ever receive. I also know that he works through other people, that he works through men and women such as yourselves, and I am most grateful to have all of you in my life. And with that, I will give you my name. My name again is Nanette, and my area code is 801, and my number is 224-3135. I live in Utah. That's Mountain Time. Area code 801-224-3135. And I really thank you for this opportunity to share this thought.
Thank you, Nanette.
You're welcome.
Q, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to apologize for the background noise. I'm sitting in my car as I'm doing this, and I just wanted to share my experience, strength, and hope with this program. I learned about the 12 steps 35 years ago, when I was living with an alcoholic and going to Al-Anon, and they said that, gee, maybe since you're only 5'2" and you weigh like 185 pounds, maybe if you went to OA, you could use some help too. And I was focusing more on him, and it was always he did this, he did that. They said I had the He's disease. But when I started looking at myself and got a hold of the big book, I could see and identify completely with the alcoholic. And I came home and I said, well, honey, I said, look at this. I've got the same disease you do, only I take it up with the flour and the sugar. And I lost weight and kept it off for a couple of years, and then got pregnant in 1977 and had a baby, and that was 33 years ago. And a year later, after my daughter was born, my husband died of his alcoholism. So I know that this is a fatal disease. And I also know that you need to stick around the program, and I didn't do that. I went out there looking for an easier, softer way, and it wasn't there. I went out and tried different types of programs, and it wasn't until 2001 I was at a special dinner at a friend's house, and I had ballooned up to 205 pounds, and she said, I'm not going to let you out of here until you promise to go to CHOW with me. And when I did, that was in 2001, it felt like I was coming home again, because the food plan was the same as it was back in over 30 years ago. And I got the program. I got it right away. And I lost the weight. But then life happens, and I didn't go through all of the steps. And a vacation came along, and my husband said, oh, do you have to do all that weighing and measuring? And I said, well, no. So I went out there on vacation. I didn't weigh and measure, but I didn't stick with the food plan. I added other things that I shouldn't have added. And, again, the weight came back on again. So I know that this is a progressive disease, and I know that I'm in the grips of it. I found among my grandfather's writings that he wrote about me when I was 9 years old that if Susan keeps indulging in all of these fat-producing luxuries, she will cry her eyes out when she comes to the teenage years when all girls long to be thin. And so right from the get-go, I learned that I was a sugar addict, that once I put that sugar and flour into my body, I didn't want to stop using it. And yet, knowing that didn't stop me from going out again and eating over life situations. And in 2006 or 7, my 38-year-old son was diagnosed with cancer, and in 4 months he passed away. And I ate over it. It didn't bring him back. And then a few months later, my younger sister, who always said she was a younger sister, 5 years younger than me, dropped dead, getting all ready to go on vacation. Again, overweight and a high-stress job. And I'm sure I see that this is a deadly, deadly disease. And so in 2008, I looked around, and I wanted to have what other people in this program had that were the FISMs. They had a serenity and a peace and calmness about them. And I realized that I had to go through all of the steps. So I began my journey on St. Patrick's Day of 08 with beginning my recommitment of abstinence. And by the time the convention came in July of that year, the end of July, I was ready for maintenance. And I wasn't quite through all of the steps, step work, but I started working on maintenance then with a maintenance sponsor. And it's just been an awesome journey ever since then. And God has truly taken away that desire for all of those fat-producing luxuries that I used to enjoy. And I know that that's because God is such a part of my life. And again, it's because I learned, too, through prayer and meditation. I'd always prayed, but I hadn't really meditated. And I started going once a week to a face-to-face meditation meeting. And one day they introduced this. I learned it was a contemplative prayer called Be Still and Know That I Am God. And as you say it, each time you say it, you drop off the last word. And it's like, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I. Be still and know that. Be still and know. Be still, be. And then when you get to that word be in the moment. Be present. Be quiet for 1 minute. And if you've never been quiet for 1 minute, it seems like a long, long time. And I'll let you experiment with that at home. Set your timer. That becomes a great help to me. And now I can go and be quiet for 4 minutes and I hope to build that time even more. And when I do that, when I'm quiet, it gives God a chance to come into my life and do for me what I couldn't do for myself. I tend to overbook myself, and God has had people call me up and say, oh, I have to cancel this lunch date, and I'm not going to be available to meet with you tomorrow. And when I had booked myself for 6 events in one day, all of a sudden they were cut down to 4, and they were manageable. And that was God working in my life in ways that I couldn't do, and I see his hand over and over again. And I don't call them coincidences. I call them God incidences. And I'm so thankful for all of the many God incidences that come into my life through people and places. And just, I'm so thankful that that obsession for the food has been lifted. And I can go on and become a sponsor and do service. That's where I've learned how the program works. As it says in our literature, service is freedom from bondage of self. And we do service by reading at the meetings. I go to a lot of phone bridge meetings, and luckily they don't have any abstinence requirements for people to read, so people can give service and be part of the meeting. And I've learned that the reason that they have us wait 7 days before we share is to get rid of that mental fog that happens when we put the white flour and sugar into our bodies. Because when I've had my slips, and over the years, as you can see, there were a lot of years between 1977 and 2008 where I've had slips, it almost felt like a hangover. I mean, I would have a headache and just feel terrible. So I know that I definitely have this allergy to the flour and the sugar. And now I have no trouble sticking with the program. And another thing was, I used to hate the words discipline and structure. And I heard this really wonderful analogy that structure is like the mercury in a thermometer. That mercury does its job when it's contained within the thermometer. But if that breaks, then that mercury beads up and scatters all over the floor. And that's what happens to my ADD brain. It scatters all over the floor. And when I go out reaching and trying to pull it all together, it doesn't work. I need the discipline and the structure of weighing and measuring my food, calling it into my sponsor, and taking care of my sponsees on a daily basis. And now I love the discipline and the structure, and I'm very thankful for this program and for all of the support that I've been given through the years. And I just thank you all for being there for me. And I think I better close now. And my phone number out in California is my cell phone. It's a T-Mobile, and I have it with me. And when I'm busy doing other things, it will be off, but I'll get back to you. And please give me your name when you call. I love to hear where people are calling from. I just love the fact that I can be talking to people in Hawaii, and in Arizona and Washington. And I even met a lady from Boston who took a trip to Greece, and I've had a couple of phone calls from outreach calls of her calling me from Greece. And it's just, this truly is a worldwide program, and I'm so thankful for it and for everybody in it. And my phone number is 310-365-1493. 310-365-1493. Thank you for letting me share.
And that's Pacific time.
Pacific
thank
time.
Thank you. Thank you, Q. And Carletta's next, please.
Thanks, Cheryl. Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for your service of organizing this. I'm really grateful to be here today, and I wanted to thank Katie for switching times with me because I had a conflict, and I really wanted to be able to give this service. So by way of qualifying, I came in to see how in November 2002 I had 2 slips along the way, and my current recommitted date of abstinence is 12/29/05. I've been relieved of 55 pounds in CHOW and maintaining 70 less than my maximum for probably almost 7 years now in Seahaw. And I first came into programs for 12-step programs for compulsive eating back in the late 70s, and at the time I was in my mid-20s. And I was just thinking about why on earth did I go to a 12-step program even at that point. I had had a long history since high school, since probably the 12th grade, of deciding that physically I didn't fit the profile. You know, I was nowhere near the ideal image of beauty, and that if I went around changing myself, I could reach that and my life would be better. And so I started dieting, exercising. I went to weight doctors. I went to commercial programs where you paid for their programs. And at that point in the 70s, in the late 70s, I was a student, and I think I was broke. And I think I heard that the 12-step programs were free. And I went, and I was blown away because the idea that I could not stop eating was something I was completely unwilling to take in at that time. So I was nowhere near surrender in those days. And so I left after a short time, but seeds were planted. And I remember experimenting at that time, going, I can throw this away and not eat it if I want to. And I would eat something, throw it in the trash, go back and get it, and go, well, that doesn't count, because I really wrapped it up well. And if I really wanted to, I could leave it in there, but I don't want to. So fortunately for me today, I say really good seeds were planted. And something about it was an attraction. Even though I wasn't in a place to take it in, there was still something about it that was an attraction. So years later, in my 30s, I went back. And I was still dieting on my own, but I was loving the programs. I was in Los Angeles at the time. And there were all these, I call them designer programs. So I could go to a program that was for single women only. At that time, I was divorced, and I was single again. I could go to a program that focused on one point of view or that, and I just shopped around. And I had a great time. I had a good social life. We went on these wonderful retreats, and there were birthday parties, you know, of the organization. I just had a blast. It was so much fun. And I was losing weight because I was dieting. And I don't really remember learning anything deeply or profoundly significant about the big book. The big book was there, for sure, but I don't remember that. Probably there was talk of a higher power, but I don't remember that. I eventually finished my course of training there, and I moved to another town, and I went to that 12-step program again in another town, but it wasn't fun. And I didn't go back because it wasn't fun like the ones I was in Los Angeles. There I get to laugh because I look at my underlying motivation, and I wasn't going for a long-term life recovery from compulsive eating. I was going because it was fun. So needless to say that with that geographic change, it wasn't enough to sustain me because I didn't have the core. Years later, I moved to another town. I moved to Albuquerque, and I became a single parent by choice. I adopted daughters. And I started confronting something that I was able to run away from for most of my life. And that was how I cope with life. I live life from a place of mostly an undercurrent of fear and overwhelm, and I would run away. And so needless to say, I didn't have a lot of long-term adult relationships because I was good at running away. But when I had children, I could not run away. I had to figure out some way to face it. And I decided to go back to a 12-step program for compulsive eating, not this one, in the year 2000. And I said, I'm going to stay because there's something spiritual here, and I'm in big trouble. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but the way I'm eating, I need something big to help me. And sure enough, I lost weight. But it wasn't long before I started gaining weight again. At this point, I was in my 40s. And I started hearing what was in the big book. I could quote things. I could tell you, God is my employer. I could say all kinds of things. But it wasn't long before I started manipulating what was my abstinence at the time and justifying it in my head and started to gain weight again. And I was scared because I started to see patterns in my parenting that I didn't want and I said I would never do. And I was just fighting, really white-knuckling it to not do things in my parenting that were done to me and that I swore that I wasn't going to do. I needed help. And it was my higher power, I believe today, who
who brought into my life someone who was in that same fellowship. And I called because I didn't make outreach calls much. I did have a sponsor, but after a while I felt I was helping her more than she was helping me. So blind leading the blind was not working. But this person had been in like 16 years, and I said, you know, I think I'm in trouble. I'm here. I had some really good abstinence and some weight loss when I came in, but now I'm gaining weight, and I don't know what to do. And she brought two things into my life. One was VPAL. She had been in program, same one, lost weight, was gaining weight. Somebody moved here from Los Angeles and came to these fellowship meetings because they were the only one in town. But she sponsored this person according to CHOW. And after a while, my friend said to her, you have got to start a fellowship here. This is working better than anything I've ever done. And because I reached out to her, she says, you got to come over and check this out. And I did. And she also said, you know, I don't know if you can use this at all or not, but I got a flyer about somebody who's offering free parenting coaching. So I actually signed up for both pretty much at the same time. And when I came to see how, I listened to the tools. I listened to what was essential to do for anyone whose disease had reached a critical level, and I was very clear that mine had, considering the way and how and the quantities, the obsession about eating that I have. Hello, is that 2 minutes? Hello? I guess that's just somebody unmuted. I don't want to go there. Cheryl, would you like to
I don't want to go to that one. They don't have a buffet. They make
go ahead.
Stuff. Which I would need to mute.
Do we need to mute?
I think so.
I'll mute.
It said buffet.
Thanks, Cheryl. So because of the gift of desperation, I was willing to try CHOW. And what I said in my head was 30 days, 30-day trial. Because this is way too much, and I can go back to the other. I was floundering, yes, but wow, this was going to be way too much, particularly for somebody like me who had toddlers, and I was overwhelmed. How could I possibly do the phone calls, the reading, the writing, the meetings? How could I fit that into my life? So I asked the same person to be my sponsor. She agreed to do so, and I 30 days. I did the questions. I did the reading and writing. I made the phone calls. I happened to have gone to a meeting that was filled with people like me who had been in another fellowship, came to this one, getting a new lease on life. And that hope line, when people stood up to say, I have 30 days of abstinence or however many days of abstinence to qualify, that line was just increasing week after week. People were losing weight. People were regaining their life. People were getting joie de vivre. It was very exciting. And I would go just for that, just because the energy and the excitement in the room was wonderful. But I got my first gift, which was to lose my craving after 2 weeks. And I thought, wow, there is something to this. If the cravings are gone, I have a chance. If that monkey is off my back, I really have a chance. Well, needless to say...
2 minutes.
Thank you. I stayed after 30 days, and I continued to work the program and to continue to get one gift after another after another. Eventually, I had two slips, and I switched to a sponsor who had 13 years of back-to-back abstinence and really solid recovery, and started learning on a deeper level to rely on a higher power, because I hadn't done that before. And in the course of learning to really rely on a higher power, instead of going back to food when stuff came up in my life, you know, again, I said fear and overwhelm, and I kept thinking that something, some eating would just take the edge off for me. So I started to learn that I could pause, and the acronym I learned for pause were pause and use spiritual principles. I learned that I could lead a life that was based on principles, not fear, not overwhelm, not the whims that I came up with, but universal truths that if I tried them, they would work, and I would build a track record of success. So one of the examples that I wanted to share was a couple of years ago, my beloved uncle, he was really my father equivalent, died, and I went back to Los Angeles for the funeral. And it was challenging. There were a bunch of family of origin issues. And I was present. I was using my programs. I was weighing and measuring. Even the day of the funeral, when the funeral procession, and he was buried in Riverside, California, which is some, I don't know, 60 miles from L.A. And I took my weighed and measured lunch and packed it in a brown bag and took it, thinking, you know, if we don't get back in time, I'm going to have my lunch. We got lost. We got delayed in traffic. All sorts of things happened. And sure enough, I was so grateful to have my lunch, and I ate my weighed and measured lunch in that limousine. I had learned failing to plan is planning to fail. Higher power is going to help me all along, and I have my part, and my part is to plan. Later, as it was all over, it happened to coincide with a World Service Conference. I went for a couple of days, but I was out of it. But there was an angel there who said, you know what, if you need to cry and grieve, just go do that, you know, permission. And I walked, and I just cried and cried, and I was so grateful to be able to be away from the family, in touch with my feelings, and feel, really grieve and feel, not cover it, not overcompensate, not go into fear, overwhelm. And finally, the next day, I went to the airport to fly back home. I was tired. I was depleted. I had low reserves. I just wanted to get home at that point. There had been an angel at the World Service Conference who gave me a free ticket to go to the banquet. So I got to be there and participate in the ways that I could and to feel my higher power giving me love and support along the way, you know. Well, I was waiting for the plane. I went to read a magazine just to occupy myself, and I missed the plane. And I was shocked and stunned and already in an emotional state, and I was in an airport, and one of the places I used to eat compulsively was airports. And here I had to wait for the next plane, an hour and a half past. The next plane came. I went to go stand by. Almost got it, but didn't. I missed that plane, too. I called on my cell phone to my outreach, to my support group, waited for the next plane. I don't know how long that was. Almost got on again. Missed that plane, too. I was really becoming beside myself. And I said to myself, I need help at this point. I've used all my resources, all my tools. I need some really divine help. And I walked around. I went to the chapel of the airport, and I prayed, and I cried, and I prayed, and I said, higher power, help me. And I'm at this point really wanting some human support right now, if you can bring that to me. And I walked around, and I remembered people told me that if you're ever in a desperate strait, you can go and ask for friends of Bill W., and people in other fellowships will come. It's kind of like an SOS call. And I was thinking about how I could get to the PA system and have somebody call and announce that here was Carletta needing somebody who was a friend of Bill W. to meet her at the chapel, you know. But before I did that, I said, I'm just going to walk around and see if there's somebody here in this whole terminal that you have picked for me to be with at this time. And sure enough, I walked around, and there was a man. It was a crowded airport, and next to him was an empty seat. And I sat next to him, and I said, have you ever had one of the worst days ever in your entire life? And he looked at me kindly, and he said, yes, I have. Are you having one of those? And I just started to cry. And I said, yes, I am, and I'm in trouble. And he talked to me. He talked to me for probably a half an hour. And we talked about missing plane stories and a time when he had to spend the entire night in an airport in South Dakota where it was snowed in and there was no way out. And it was just human-to-human connection. And I knew it was my higher power helping me because those restaurants were calling me at that point. And I hadn't had a call like that in years. And I was so grateful, and I just sat and let it in. You know, that's the other thing for me is I would walk around with my fear and my overwhelm with my fist tight and my defiance. Thank you. I'm just going to wrap up. But learning that in this program, I can open my hand and let it in. And at the end of that, I went back to check to see if I could get on another plane. It wasn't going to happen. I decided that higher power was going to help me. I went to another terminal. They had a plane leaving in 15 minutes. I was able to get a ticket, get on it, and go home. And that I add today to my track record because there's been so many, but that's a big one, that my higher power is always there. And it's for me to turn to my higher power in times of stress instead of the food, and I will always get help. And with that, I pass, and thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity to recall and to give service.
Thank you, Coletta. Can we have your number, please?
My number is 505-265-6383.
Thank you so very much. I'm sorry.
It's Mountain Time Zone.
Mountain Time. Okay. Liz, are you there?
Yes, I am. Are you running out of time?
No, just go ahead. We'll try to have, we'll ask John for a little extra time there. Go ahead.
Oh, I'll keep it short. Hi, this is Liz, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And when I was asked to do this, I had only shared one time as a speaker at a meeting. And so because when I first came in 3 years ago, there was like a six-month requirement to be a speaker. So when somebody just asked me to share for a little bit on surrender or acceptance at a relapse prevention meeting, I did that. And that's the only time I've ever been able to speak because, like I said, when I was in before, I never got the 6 months. And then now it's a 30-day requirement. So at the beginning of this, I heard someone say this is a qualification, and now I'm not sure because the only thing I ever shared on was this thing about surrender. So I'm a little confused about what I should be sharing on right now, but I feel like I've been sitting here in a daze listening to everybody and feeling like, wow, there's so many more people that are more qualified to share than I am, and what could I say? You know, I probably shouldn't share until I have 6 months to qualify because I'm just in the beginnings of this, and I am actually still in the beginning surrender area, still working on continuing my surrender and committing to the program. And I'm really feeling very humbled by everybody else I've heard. And I'm about 87 days absent now, and it's the longest time I've had in 3 years in CHOW since I came in. And I struggled and relapsed a lot, and I guess I could never understand why, because I would diligently work all the tools and the steps, and I almost got through all of step four before I slipped the first time. The longest time I had before was 66 days, and I could never figure out what was wrong. I really thought God just didn't favor me, favored everybody else. I felt like, you know, the have-nots, not the haves. And I just felt like a big victim, and I couldn't understand why I couldn't get it or keep it together. And this time when I came in, I did come in to see how actually 7 or 8 years ago to face-to-face meetings that were an hour away, but I didn't stay down there. I built some resentments because the people in the face-to-face meetings didn't call or call back, and there was no support. So so I left there and just took the food plan with me. Is that somebody speaking or is that
my phone?
Okay. Okay. So anyway, so I left there after a couple of months of feeling again like a big victim. I drove all the way down there an hour, you know, and then I get down there and then I call people for support and nobody called back. And I remember resenting it, but one thing my sponsor at the time did tell me, which helped me a lot with the phone call thing, was she said, when you make your calls, they're for your program. If people don't call you, that's about their program. Or if they don't call you back, that's their program. You don't need to worry about their program, just your program. And I have to tell you, that helped me a lot because I was really, you know, getting into some resentment about that. But I also know that I couldn't really do it without the support I needed. I'm a really low-bottom addict. At that time, I weighed in the 280s when I came in. And I did lose a little bit of weight, but I didn't stay long. You said 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So anyway, the long and the short of this is that the difference this time is I'm doing all the tools like I did before, but the difference this time is that I'm calling people for help when I need help. Before, I did everything I was supposed to do, but when I really felt like eating or I had an emotional day where I wanted to eat over emotions or anything like that, I wouldn't pick up the phone. I try to tough it out and get through it myself. And that is the big difference. And I have to also have an attitude of humility and let go of trying to control some aspect of the program, which I always did too in the past. And this time I'm really trying to focus on helping others, which also helps me a lot. I have three wonderful, beautiful sponsees. I couldn't be more blessed. And they help me so much. And my sponsor, you know, I've had more than one sponsor. And every single one, sponsor I've ever had in the program has just been wonderful. It's never been them. And the other thing I have to say is whenever I think that the problem with me not getting or staying abstinent is outside me, I'm on the wrong track. Because I used to think it was the food plan, it was the sponsor maybe, it was the not being able to share on a meeting I don't feel a part of. I mean, I had a long list of things and excuses for not being abstinent. And it, as long as, and every time I fixed one of those, whatever it was, guess what? It still didn't keep me abstinent. So to me, it's an inside job. And I just have to be humble and be willing and open and honest and do this program from the heart, in a humble way, and not be judgmental and critique people. I used to do a lot of that. And just try to be open-hearted and vulnerable and trusting of other people that they will be there to help me. They want to help me, maybe. And I like I said, I don't have that long. I have 19 pounds that I've lost in the first 60 days. Thank you. And I'm soon to weigh again. So I don't have as much abstinence as everyone else has shared, and I'm humbled by them. But I guess I share it for some reason. My phone number in Florida is 561-596-3999. That's 561-596-3999. Thank you for letting me share.
And that's Eastern time.
Eastern time, right.
Carlisa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I got 10 minutes?
Yep.
I'm a speed read, okay? Hi, everybody. This is Carlisa. I'm a Food Inventory Step sponsor in program and abstinence since April 4th of 2009 by God's grace. I released 114 pounds. This is a talk for the beginner, which was my qualification when I first gave this. So I'm going to give it again because each day I start anew. I am really talking to myself here. I want to tell about how I was, what happened, and how I am, and who I am now. And during the week of April 1st, 2009, I bought and ate several pounds of food that I'm allergic to. Unfortunately, I have many food allergies to very common foods. Unfortunately as well, I ate these foods in the past in huge quantities all of the time. I couldn't help it. I felt compelled. Compelled even though I would each time get vomiting sick, feel bloated, become congested, and inflamed. But I came to the end of the road of misery Easter week 2009. Finally, after 25 years of compulsive eating, vomiting, exercise, binging, I threw up my hands and said, God, I don't know what to do. Help me. The moment I said those words that time for the first time, something said, go to the computer. I did, and I typed into the computer screen the words compulsive eater, as I was instructed. Several compulsive eating programs popped up. The only one which popped out at me was the CEA Howe website. As I was reading through the words of the website, I identified absolutely when I got to the CEA Howe concept, the part which reads, quote, the CEA Howe groups have been formed in the belief that our disease is absolute and therefore only an absolute acceptance of the CEA Howe concept will offer any sustained assistance to those whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Wow. Compulsion has reached a critical level. I read these words and knew this CEA Howe place is where I'm supposed to be. I read further in the concept these words. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive eating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. I started to shout, whoa, whoa, whoa. I just got happy in my house. There is a problem. I've been living it. And now, after reading these words from this website, I knew that there was a solution. I didn't know all the aspects of the solution, but I knew whoever wrote those words that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves, those people, those CEA help people could at least point me in the right direction of my solution. So after reading about CEA How, I got on the phone bridge the next morning at the 7 a.m. Friday, Good Friday, Eastern Standard Time meeting. And I have been in CEA How ever since, and I do not ever plan to go anywhere else. I know today there is a solution to my compulsive eating, in particular my compulsive behavior in general. That solution is becoming and staying spiritually fit. As the book, Big Book says at pages 84 and 85, we are not fighting it, our compulsion, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So what is fit spiritual condition? The Big Book then reminds us we are not cured of alcoholism, compulsive eating. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. I must admit that I considered myself a woman of faith when I first came into program. Until 12 months ago, or now it's 16 months ago, I never said these words, thy will, not mine, be done. It didn't occur to me to say it. So what I have come to know is that I had faith in 100 small fears, my own will, and the past. Everything I had faith in had already happened and had already died. In other words, the only thing I had faith in was the past, my ability to repeat it on and on and on. And so how did I start turning away from compulsion to recovery, from insanity to peace? I got a sponsor and committed to using the 7 tools of recovery every day. In the first 30 days, I was a heaping mess. In my culture, we might say, I was a hot mess. I felt like my skin was being pulled back. But I kept using my tools, calling my sponsor, committing my food, weighing and measuring and eating on the food plan. I did a question and answer every day. I read the Big Book and found comfort. I went to at least one meeting a day and just listened. I heard hope and recovery, which helped me through the pain of resistance, withdrawal, and denial. I called 3 people every day. Some were not so nice, and it did not matter to me, and it didn't stop me because I'm responsible for myself. Because so many more people were great to me, I have found that having people I can call in recovery has saved my life, literally. I keep people's anonymity. I did service in my first 30 days by reading at meetings, and I sponsor now. Using the 7 tools, I learned discipline. Walking the 12 steps, which is what I have learned through the various levels of sponsorship, is how I recover. Now that I've done my inventory, that fact-finding and fact-facing mission, and turned it over and done my step work, I've added a few more items to my everyday list for tools of recovery. Number one, every morning before I get up from bed, I say the Serenity Prayer, and then I pray the first 3 steps. Now, when I came into 12 steps, I'd never been in 12 steps before, so the only 3rd step prayer I knew was this one. I said, God, I am powerless. My life is unmanageable without you. Please restore me to sanity. I turn my life and my will over to you. In my times of distress, I repeat this statement several times and always release calm. Number 2, lately, when I feel resistant, I've been asking myself, who is the higher power I'm seeking in this situation? Too often, I am free today to admit, it is not the God of my understanding. It's my old idol, self-will, fear, self-pity, and self-righteousness. Asking and answering this question, who is my higher power, has had a, may I say, sobering effect. now into recovery, when people ask me, how am I doing? I respond, fun is driving my car and joy is on the hood giving direction. Thank you all for always, 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 always being there. My name is Carlisa. My number is 202-420-9007, Washington, D.C. Again, 202-420-9007. Be blessed.
Thank you, Carlisa. Is John there? John, are you there? John, I know that it's just about 4 o'clock. You think we can still get your qualification in?
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Sure. I'm John, compulsive eater and food addict. Just to qualify, I've had back-to-back abstinence now since October 12th of 1993. I've been maintaining about a 90-pound weight loss, 100 from my top weight since October of 94. I'm a food inventory staff and maintenance sponsor. Just to tell you a little bit about, share with you a little about where I came from, I don't want to go into all my food and stuff, but I did just about everything imaginably, except one thing is that I never went to any other program because I was a do-it-yourself food person. You know, I always did my own diets and because I'm a smart person, so I would figure out all the things that I thought I needed to do, and then I would do it, and then I would fail. I got to the point where I could follow a diet for about, 3 hours before I would lose it again. And at that point, I found my way into Overeaters Anonymous. And at Overeaters Anonymous, when I went into it, it was back in 1981. It was very much like how is now. They talked about a food plan. They had something called Dignity of Choice, what I later found out that Fred S. Wrote. I had to get a sponsor right away. My sponsor had me writing, and it had me writing on Bill's story. And, you know, I had to let him know what I was going to eat so that, you know, I was basically kind of calling in my food. And I figured out quite quickly that the program was spiritual, and actually the sponsor that I first got was a Hell's Angel. And he was pretty good. He was actually pretty spiritual there for a little while until he beat his girlfriend up. And then I thought, well, maybe this is not a spiritual guy. Maybe I should look around for another sponsor. So I did find another sponsor, and he helped me through the program. It turned out that he, because it was a spiritual program, because it was derived from AA, I figured I'd get myself an alcoholic as a sponsor who, basically did the same kind of work that I did, and he actually turned out to be perfect. He was a wonderful sponsor, even though he didn't share my problem, and he had me making calls to people and going to meetings and doing service and sponsoring people and all that. My food was really squeaky clean for about 5 years, and during that time, I did my first inventory, and I gave it away and lost my weight and maintained it at my goal weight and was doing real good in the program. And every once in a while, I'd hear somebody who was a guru would come along and say something really spiritual and sounding, and I would switch my program around a little bit, and then I'd struggle, and then I'd have to figure out what I needed to do and find out, and then I'd get back on track and be okay. The food, was, roughly abstinent, I mean, because that's the way the program was, and, I followed the food plan that was, sort of like a Weight Watchers food plan, because that was what I was familiar with before. And like I said, I did really well, and my food was really, really clean for about 5 years. And then I went to a meeting and heard a guy say that if you don't need it, you can have it back. And again, remember, all this was in OA. This was not in How. And I'd heard about OA How at that point, and, it just seemed like a really Nazi, scary program, and everybody said it was rigid, and people were, like, too tough and stuff like that. And so I just didn't need any of that stuff, I didn't think. And so I just didn't go to any of those meetings. Anyway, the guy said, if you don't need it, you can have it off. You can take it back, rather. And so since I'm kind of like an intellectual person, I thought, oh, well, that's an interesting. And it's a short saying, too. It's kind of like easy does it. It's a, like, short, catchy thing. And so I actually decided I'd do some self-analysis there. I looked at myself, and I said, well, do you need it? Well, and the truth was is that I really didn't need the food at that point. I was totally relieved from the obsession with food. I could have slept overnight in a bakery and not had any trouble whatsoever. And so the answer to the first part of the syllogism was no, or yes, I don't need it anymore. And so then the second part, of course, was then you can have it back. And I said, oh, okay, cool. And at that time, people were taking all kinds of dumb stuff back into their abstinence. I heard people with like 23 years of abstinence taking their binge foods back, trying them for a bit, having trouble putting them back out and stuff like that. The other thing is that the nature of the program, at least from my perspective, has sort of changed so that they were sort of viewing it like a lifestyle choice or something, you know, as opposed to an addiction. And because it was so much that way, when I heard the saying, if you don't need it, you can have it back, I didn't question that, well, if this was alcohol and I concluded I didn't need alcohol and I was an alcoholic, could I have it back? That didn't even occur to me, because the answer, of course, would have been no. You know, if I took it back, sooner or later I'd be back drinking again. Well, sooner or later is exactly what happened. After about 2.5 years of messing around with my food, because I could have it back, I was in a total relapse. And I didn't stop going to meetings. I kept going to meetings. There were periods of time, maybe a month or two, where I didn't go to meetings, but I always considered myself to be in at least Overeaters Anonymous at that point. And I struggled, and I tried to start meetings with relapse meetings, relapse prevention meetings, and, you know, try to find sponsors that did the same thing I did, and, you know, had a certain amount of abstinence, and if they had relapse and had recovered from it. And I had all these criteria set up for how sponsors should be. So anyway, I talked to a very spiritual woman on the phone who was kind of like a spiritual mentor for me, and she basically asked me, could you call 3 people a day? And I said, oh, yeah, I could do that. Could you go to 3 meetings a week? I said, yeah. Could you write your food down, maybe call it into somebody and commit it so that you can just sort of follow that? And I said, yeah. So basically she laid out the how food plan without ever saying how. And so I started doing that. And she also said, oh, by the way, John, anybody whose food is in better shape than yours would be a good person to get as a sponsor. And I thought, duh, yeah, that's right. So I actually went to a meeting I had started that night, which was kind of a relapse meeting, and this guy walked into the meeting, and he was like looked like a Greek fisherman, and, you know, kind of swarthy looking, and, you know, kind of the guy that my judgment would have said, don't ask that guy to be your sponsor ever, you know. And he actually sat down, and he started talking about his recovery, and the things he said were almost identical to what my spiritual advisor had said to me on the phone. It was like he was listening in on the conversation or something. And I thought, this is a God thing. And so I asked him to be my and his food was in good shape, too. So I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said he's basically sponsored a lot in how, but he would co-sponsor me. So I'd like to say that, well, okay, and everything got swell at that point, and I got abstinent, but it didn't. But I got familiar with the how food plan. I was able to attend a few how meetings. And then in 1993, I went to an OA meeting and saw this really regular, ordinary guy looking like he was there for the girls, because he didn't look like he ever really had a food problem, or he did maybe had 10 pounds to lose or something like that. But he was very serene when he talked, and I was so angry at that point because I gained so much of my weight back. I didn't get up to my top weight, which was like 296, but I was probably around, 260-something. And miserable and angry. And so I really missed the serenity, so I asked him if he would sponsor me. And he said, yeah, I'll sponsor, but I only sponsor in OA How, that was what it was before, it was See How. So I said, okay, because I was familiar with the program, I was ready and willing to do it, and I was willing to, you know, crawl through broken glass with bare knees, you know, if that's what was needed, because I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so told me to attend my first meeting, and I attended my first meeting. It was in Agoura, California. And at that meeting, it's like I walked through the door, and I thought, whoa, people here are serious. This is where the recovery went, because I was feeling hungry after I left OA meetings, but in this OA How meeting, I felt full. I heard people saying abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception, and they were practicing that. They wouldn't let anything get in the way of their absence. There was no messing around about it. They were doing all the things that CEO How now requires that we do. It was wonderful. And I got abstinent right away, and that was October 12th of 1993. What I learned from being in OA was that not to be a sheep. I followed the principles of the program. They're what worked for me. And because they worked for me, I kept doing them, and they kept working. And I keep doing the same thing now, and it's, you know, not how many ever years later it is, like 17 or something like that, and they keep working. You know, I don't deviate. I work the food pan perfectly. I don't take that first compulsive bite. I do that perfectly. I'm always sponsored. I always call my sponsor every day. I write my food down. I call it in a committed. I read something spiritual. I write every day. You know, I sponsor people. I attend meetings. I do service at meetings. I do everything this program tells me to do. Why? Not because I'm like this spiritual giant, but because that's what allows me to keep my daily commitment to abstinence, because my daily commitment to abstinence comes first. That I do first and foremost above everything else. And so I work everything in the program I can to make that as easy as possible. Lord knows with our food plan, it's difficult. So, you know, I do whatever I can to make my abstinence easier. I don't let anything get in the way with it. If it starts to interfere with my abstinence, it's out. You know, I won't go to any family get-togethers if they're going to jeopardize my abstinence. I don't let myself hang around food conversations very long before I excuse myself. You know, I just am unwilling to let anything interfere with my abstinence. No relationship, my spouse, no kids, grandkids, doesn't make any difference. Nobody gets in the way of that. Abstinence has to come first. And then I use my higher power. You know, now I got an open channel of my higher power, like he responds right away. And, you know, that wasn't the case when I was eating. He was there, but my ears were stuffed with food, so, you know, I couldn't hear my higher power very well. But I got to say that now he's there. He answers quickly. He's guided me to incredible places in my life because I'm willing to just show up every day and do what is right and fake it until I make it and hang out with the winners and be sponsored and keep my daily commitment to abstinence first and foremost, and that's it. And thanks for letting me share. My name's John. I'm a food addict and compulsive eater. My phone number in the Pacific Coast time is area code 949-855-1482. That's 949-855-1482. And thanks for asking me to share, Cheryl. Bye-bye.
Thank you, John. Thank you all for participating. Foremost, our wonderful qualifiers. And, of course, all those that attended, we can't do this without you. Please remember our cherished tradition, what you hear here, whom you hear here, when you leave here, let us stay here. Please let us close with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Remember, you can play. Thy will, not mine, be done. Remember, you can play back this workshop at 712-432-1284, same access code 152077 pound, in an hour, and you can do that until the next workshop. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks. And this is John. I'm good.